Not being much of an RPG person, I only now learned Final Fantasy III didn't see a release in the PS1 Final Fantasy releases Anthology Chronicles and Origins, not seen release in the West until the Nintendo DS in 2006. 2 decades later, Square Enix is releasing all 6 of the Final Fantasy Pixel remasters for PlayStation 4 and Switch next year. Apparently only physical releases? This is the re-release news with probably 10 more re's needed. Now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki to tell you more about this and the rest of the week's gaming news. Starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
I think it's digital individually. But anyway, hi, hello out there, my friends on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, and we are live once again tonight with episode number 941 of our program for December the 18th of 2022. The holiday season officially underway in many sorts. My name is Rob Roberts, and I am here with my co-hosts, as they are every week. Say hello first off to Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers.
Oh, hi.
Hello, hello, and I hope you're having a good Hanukkah. It's night one.
It's great when I get to start setting stuff on fire and butchering Hebrew.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Sounds like a celebration.
It was, I had everything all set up and then I was about to do the oil. I'm like, oh, I don't want to do the oil this year. So I just got really good candles.
There you go. That works. I was actually playing Pokemon Go earlier today. I'll get into gaming weeks and stuff. But as I was trying to walk a lot, I ended up, as I often do, down near the Capitol building. And they had a whole little setup there. It's kind of off to the side, but I don't want to make it sound like they kind of othered it, because like if you're taking a shot like straight down at the Capitol, you have the big giant tree in the middle, but now they have like a menorah that's on the right side that would show up in the frame too. And it looked like they were probably, I mean, I was there like 3 o'clock, so it was still light out. I imagine they were going to do a big ceremony at sundown, but yeah. So it was nice to see that.
That's cool. Yeah. And I haven't made any latkes yet. I've had some tummy trouble, but cool. I'm planning on doing it at some point this week.
That was an OLR tradition I miss back when we were live and in person. We'd often get some potato pancakes on the first night of Hanukkah.
For night times. It happened to be that the show was on, but yeah.
Yeah.
And the house would smell like potato-y deliciousness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good times.
Well, maybe... One day.
Maybe one day. One day. We can, you know what? I'll eat potato latkes anytime. I don't give a, it's just, I'll eat a gingerbread cookie anytime. Like it doesn't have to be the holidays. Let's be clear. Anyway, say hello as well to Techmaster Loki.
Hello.
Hi, Loki. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
You got one of my very faves playing behind you. I can't tell if that's a stage from Jumpman or Jumpman Jr. On
Jumpman.
It's the original Jumpman on Commodore 64. Love it. One of my faves. Was that something you were playing this week?
Well, yeah, because I met Randy Glover, the creator of Jumpman.
Oh, get out. Well, how'd that happen?
I also got this.
Oh, I don't know. There was a convention here in town, wasn't there? Like one of those gamer expos over at the Scottish Rite.
Sack Gamer Expo.
Yeah.
And so he was there. They had Jumpman. I've never played Jumpman. I played Jumpman Jr. and I was playing on the ColecoVision. Which is like, oh yeah. He's like, I forgot that there was one on the ColecoVision. I guess because he's like, I did the Commodore 64 and Atari. I don't know if he ported it or someone else ported it to the ColecoVision. But I did get to meet him. And then they had a raffle as well. It was going to charity. So I entered the raffle and I won. I had 3 choices. I could get 1 bag of buttons, a second bag of buttons, or the button that was on his shirt signed by him. And so I got the button on his shirt signed by him that says creator of Jumpman.
So, nice. So I didn't know in the gaming industry we took people's clothes and had them autographed. I thought that was just at the Magic Mike show, but here we are.
I met him this weekend. But yeah,
that's cool.
That was like Jumpman Jr. was like a game, like my fave game going back to the ColecoVision. It was like one I played all the time. In fact, when I got the ColecoVision mini thing that they had, that was the reason why, because it had Jumpman Jr. in it. So it's awesome. I really like that game. I am not very good at it though, because they had a Commodore 64 mini playing it, and I've never used a Commodore 64 controller. I mean, it's sort of like an Atari controller, but it's like used to the old joysticks anymore. So it's that game is like so touchy anyways, as it is, like you have to be very precise with your jumps and like getting right to the edge and stuff. That controller is not meant for that.
I was going to say Jumpman Jr. is on the C64 mini as well. And I would imagine the C64 regular one that they just put out not long ago.
I don't know if I have $25 to buy the cartridge.
The actual Coleco cartridge?
I've got two ColecoVisions.
Oh, wow. And you know, when you say cartridge, it's funny because a lot of people forget the Commodore 64 actually had cartridges as well. And I actually had Jumpman Jr. as a cartridge on Commodore 64. So, yeah, I always forget that that computer had cartridges, but it did. So it's just that's where my brain
technically
goes.
Technically the version for Coleco Atom and ColecoVision.
You know,
that was a game I didn't have. I had like Mousetrap and Carnival and Space Fury and Turbo and stuff like that.
A lot of those ports back in the day were done by other people, though. It wasn't often. I mean, look at a game like Pitfall, right? David Crane's Pitfall for the Atari 2600. Mm-hmm. That game was ported literally, you name it, in the 80s, they put Pitfall on it, right? In one form or another. Either Pitfall or Pitfall 2, The Lost Caverns, was even on like the Sega Master System. I think it's a port of the arcade game or something, but I digress. They weren't all David Crane. So it's interesting how, yeah, oftentimes other people would end up being responsible for translating, you know, a game over, and with mixed success sometimes. Look at, you know, Pac-Man on the 2600, an infamous example, certainly not done
well,
by the
I
same...
Mean, folks, they were kind of behind some limitations there.
Yes,
it's like,
they
well,
were.
We need you to fit this much game into this much space. And it's like, well, I can't do that without making compromises. Too bad, you know. But yeah, I think I've seen that they've done like some fan conversions or stuff like that using a larger ROM, and it it looks pretty close. But yeah, it was cool to meet him. And of course, yeah, he was also behind Summer Games and Summer Games 2. So
With
Epics, they were given. I wanted like because like the way it was working is like okay, each person that wins the raffle, you get to pick one thing, and then it gets down to the end. So they had a sealed copy of Jumpman for the Commodore 64. I wanted that. And then they also had a Commodore 64 Mini. I would have taken that, but
they're fine.
Pin's fine.
Yeah.
The pin's fun.
That's fun. I want to hear more about the convention, but I do want to go to our chat room, of course, and get some comments because we do tape live every Sunday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific at the Voice of Geeks Network over at twitch.tv/VOG Network. That's VOG Network. And we're on right after the Bobby Blackwolf show, although Bobby Blackwolf not on tonight as him and Mrs. Blackwolf are celebrating the holidays a little bit early this year. But Bobby will be back next week on December 25th. Yes, even on that day, with a new episode of his program. And I know he has missed you all because he was out last week as well, but he'll be back next week. So hello to everybody in chat. Tiger Claw pointing out Jumpman was Mario's original name, if I recall. Yeah, that was his name when he was the villain in Donkey Kong. He was the villain in Donkey Kong Jr. Hello, bang bang. He was a hero in Donkey Kong, but yes, I believe they did call him Jumpman in that game.
Jumpman.
Yeah. Yep. So I wonder if maybe because of Jumpman Jr.'s success, or Jumpman and Jumpman Jr., those games weren't just big in the U.S. Keep in mind the Commodore 64 was huge in the U.K., huge. So I wonder if because Jumpman kind of ended up being part of the pop culture, you know, lexicon over there, they had to find a new name. I don't know. I mean, it would be an interesting documentary someday.
Far above the ZX Spectrum and its other computer systems.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's interesting.
The CPC, all that.
Yeah, all of it. You know, it's so funny how in this day and age, we're always like, oh, it's PlayStation versus Microsoft versus Nintendo. When like in the 80s, there were like 10 different things all competing at once. I remember, I'm dating myself, I don't care. I remember magazine ads that would show off a game like, let's say, I think actually Mousetrap would be a good example. And it was always like the Parker Brothers ones for Commodore 64, like Frogger. Frogger's a great example. It would have, here's
like everything,
the Commodore version, the Apple II version, the TI-99/4A version.
Amiga.
Maybe not for that particular game, but later ones, yes. The
Tandy.
The 2600, the 5200, the ColecoVision. It was literally everything.
I remember the Tandy computer.
Oh, yeah.
With the cartridge that you shoved in up on the side of it and the silver keys.
Can one of you Google experts like Tiger Claw or something, since I'm live trying to do a program? Could one of you find like one of those 80s ads that shows that? Like, look for like an old Frogger ad, or like Popeye, I think, had one, if you remember that game. I would just love to like show that on screen as like an example here, and have a little better detail for those that are listening on the podcast feed, because even though we do tape live on Sunday nights, of course, we are available as a podcast as well on most of the places where you can find podcasts, such as Spotify or iTunes or what have you. Tiger Claw sent me a YouTube link. I was looking more for a still image.
I have
image,
a picture, but you know what, I can't like upload the thing. But yeah, I see here. I'll post it in chat real fast. But yeah, it's basically got a bunch of different versions of the game box floating in water. So it's like in
you
television.
You know what ads looked like in the 80s, though.
That's close. Yeah, I see what you're doing with all the different boxes. That's close. I saw the one Def put, too. Those are close, but it's not the one I'm thinking of.
Well, but you know what ads looked like back then, where it wasn't just like ads today are like, here's a picture, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then in the past, it was like, here is a complete novel and backstory of every one of these games.
I found it. Okay, how do I get this image? Copy image address. Okay. Yes, this is what I'm going to, let me show this on the other screen here. Sorry, I am doing, this is the joy of doing things live sometimes, but I'm doing it live. So what you can see here, this is an ad for Popeye, and you actually see all the different screens. It shows the 5200, the Commodore 64. I'm going to put this link in chat as well. The Atari 400 and 800, which I even forgot was a system. So and so on. So that's yeah, it shows like all the different systems there. I'll put that link in chat too, I promise, just so you can see. But you could just see the scope of like all the systems that things were on. So it's just wild. Anyway, all right, Loki, I said I would ask you about the convention. So what else did you see? Because what's funny, I got pushed a Facebook ad for that convention, and it was the first time I'd heard of it, but I got the Facebook ad on Saturday night. So it was like the thing was half over already. And I was like, well, I'm not going to go today. Yeah,
and I didn't stay very long. There's not a lot to do there unless you're watching panels, which I wasn't. The whole reason I was going there was because there was some people I wanted to give physical copies of my game to, just because either promotion or I figured they would enjoy it. Like, John Riggs, he has a YouTube channel. He's got like gaming nostalgia stuff that he does. And I've been wanting to send him one for a while, and I just haven't really bothered to look up his PO box or whatever. And so I saw that he was going to be in town, so I was like, okay, cool, I'll go give one to him. And then so he was there, and so I got to meet with him and talk about, like, he does some game dev as well a little bit, with his friend, and so he had a few games that he was selling as well, so we got to do that. So, and then he actually bought a copy off of me as well for his friend, so I actually sold one. And then there was who else was there? Joey Ferris with Game Explain. So I saw him there. I've recognized him before because I think I follow him on YouTube as well. And then I know Gamer Dad was there. And there's one other guy. I don't remember. I think it may have been this Gabo the Giver, who is like this Pixel Game Squad thing. They look for NES games and stuff.
I'm going to assume all these content creators are based out of SAC or the Bay Area or something.
I don't think so. I know John Riggs is not. I don't think
he's... Well, I meant the content creators specifically.
I don't know if they are. There's some maybe, some not. They had a few other like celebrities there too. One that was very apparent as we were leaving was Tim Kurtzrow. You may recognize him as the voice of the NBA Jam, NHL hits, NFL Blitz, MLB Slugfest series.
Oh,
so
boy.
He was shouting a lot of stuff.
Oh God, yeah, do my voicemail. Yeah, I bet.
So that was funny. And then they had a few people from Mortal Kombat. So Daniel Pessanina, who was Johnny Cage, Reptile, Scorpion, Sub-Zero.
Bobby did the panel with him at Dragon Con. So yeah, he's making the rounds. That's funny.
Yeah, Anthony Marquez, who was he was a Kung Lao in Mortal Kombat 2. And what else? Philip Ahn, who was Shang Tsung in Mortal Kombat 2 as well. So, yeah,
they had a different group. Daniel Pessanina is the only one.
He's also a doctor, apparently, so he has a book called Mortal Doctor, which I think that's funny. But yeah, I did that, and then we just briefly looked at, like, I took my kids, and they were super bored because they like playing the indie games that are there, and they didn't have any of the indie game guys there this year, so that's kind of disappointing. They usually were set up, so they didn't really want to play anything. I walked around the vendor booth area a little bit. I bought Contra, and that was about it. Like, I don't know. There was stuff that was kind of expensive, like, and especially they had games that were marked up quite a bit, and the condition that they were in was just not good. I was looking for some indie games and stuff, too. They've had a few guys that had indie NES games and stuff there, not homebrew, and I was looking for some of that, but it just wasn't finding it. So we were in and out in about an hour, like, honestly. But I mean, it's fun if you like, you know, the panels and stuff and want to see like some of these people and get their autographs or whatever. It's a good time. I mean, we lucked out because the last time we went, it was a week earlier, and that's in the middle of that stupid Sacramento marathon that they have, the international one. So getting to the Scottish Rite Center was just a pain because it's the marathon run literally goes right past it. And so all the streets are blocked off. Whereas this year is a week later, so it was just like no traffic, easy in and out, wasn't super crowded, so it was good. And I ended up giving away about like 4 copies of the game, and I sold one. So five Pixel Poops number 2 out there. And funny enough, like John Riggs had messaged his friend, like showed him a picture of what it was, and the guy's like, "Oh yeah, I had just bookmarked that page today." So
wow,
it's out there. Nice. Yeah, it'd be fun, like, if people just get to play it and stuff. Mm-hmm. There was Digital Eclipse was there, too, and I should have talked to them about publishing, but I didn't get around to it. So, it's all right.
You blew it. All awkwardly you had your chance, and you blew it. It's all right.
Yeah, it's just awkwardly
I get it. To people. You have to be in the right mindset.
But, yeah, so it was okay. But, yeah, that's really the whole reason I went, is just to give out copies of the game.
That sounds like fun. I gotta
make more because I'm out. Well, I have 2 left, but I'm out of physical copies of the first 12 at least.
I wish I'd known. I would have gone. It wasn't on my radar, unfortunately. So, yeah, it's too bad. But I'll have to keep an eye out for the next one. So it's fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into some gaming news. We'll come back and talk about our gaming weeks. We want to definitely get Darksiders Gaming Week, and I have some stuff too, so we'll get to that. But first, let's get into our kind of lead topic for tonight. Although, I mean, this is kind of an ongoing saga, and let's be real. We're getting into that time of year, you know, with the Hanukkah starting us off tonight. We all know then it's Christmas, then it's New Year's, all the other winter celebrations as well. Like we know the news is going to slow down a little bit. So, but we'll push through with what's out there. We still have some ongoing developments in the Microsoft and Activision Blizzard saga. Yes, Loki?
Yeah, so there's just more news coming out about that. And I think they've already kind of said that as well. But Microsoft offered Sony first off, they've offered Sony Call of Duty on their platform for 10 years if they're willing to sign an agreement for it. And then also with that, you know, they're saying that, you know, they also offer to put it on their PlayStation Plus service as well, to kind of, you know, be an extra thing that they could offer for their new users to kind of spice up PlayStation Plus and make it a little bit more valuable, I guess. But I still think that they're basically saying that's still not enough. And same, I think, like the FTC and like the European Union are also investigating everything because they feel that it's not competitive enough. Once again, like, I get it. It is not, it is the lack of competition. But like, why this and not Discovery? Like that's yeah. I'm still like scratching my head over that one because like I get it, this could harm Sony down the road, but at the same time, like, they would do the same in a heartbeat. Like I don't doubt it, but you know, when I see that type of merger, like with Discovery and Warner Brothers and HBO and all that stuff, like I feel more harm is being done there, mm-hmm. like than this. Granted, and I'm sure that Sony sees the writing on the wall, like even a 10-year agreement doesn't, that's 10 years. That's like, you know, another console cycle. And then they have the advantage in that they see that that could be a problem. But I guarantee if this doesn't go through, they will try to do the same thing. And then and ironically, it'll probably go through because that's how the world works.
Looking in chat for some comments, DJ Rama S in chat says, Sony needs to stop whining. SG100 Matt says, I think we all know if the roles were reversed, Sony would offer MS nothing. They'd tell him to kick rocks. I feel MS is going out of their way to make this work. I'm actually curious if there's anyone in chat, and I promise, no judgment. We want to get all the voices here. I'm curious if there's anyone out there that maybe agrees with the FTC side of thing and does not want to see the Microsoft and Activision Blizzard merger go through, and maybe what the reasons are for that. I mean, admittedly, and I've kind of, my opinion really hasn't changed from what I said a couple weeks ago, is it's like, I don't love the dog eat big dog sort of thing that the games industry is becoming. I don't love it, but it's this particular circumstance where something needs to change at Activision Blizzard where I'm fine with it. Even though, yes, I realize it's a huge company. Microsoft's also a huge company, and it is going to give them a huge share of it. I'm not sure I'm convinced it's giving them a larger share than what Sony has. Sony has a large entertainment arm that they could integrate better with PlayStation that they're simply not doing. And I've said this before on the show. PlayStation Plus, how much of a bigger deal would that be if it actually gave you some Sony movies, some Sony music?
Right.
I guess it does give you like Crunchyroll, which is Sony owned, or like a trial or something. I don't know. Like it gives you some limited Sony things, but it's not at the level that you would expect Sony could offer, where Microsoft doesn't have a CD label or a music label a large one, a major one, I should say, that I know of, mm-hmm. or an entertainment production company, really. So I think it's Sony's own fault. They're not leveraging things more. I don't know.
And they are doing the same thing on a smaller level. I mean, they're making individual deals with different game studios to basically put it on their platform for a year before it gets to go on any other console platform. And they do that quite often. And they gate a bunch of stuff like Spider-Man in, you know, a lot of it, funny enough, is around Square Enix, but like gating off Spider-Man from the whole Microsoft platform for the Marvel Avengers game.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just stupid, yeah. But that's something that they do. I have a hard time believing, like, at least, you know, you have this company that's saying, listen, we're committed to bringing this to your platform still. Like, I mean, if it were me, like, like after all this bullshit, I'd be like, you know, all that Skyrim stuff and all the new Elder Scrolls games? Well, fuck you guys. You ain't getting shit now. It like, yeah. Causes problems with Activision. We're fucking cutting that shit off.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, I would be... I mean, that's what's going to come is, you know... Oh, yeah, Starfield? Nah, you ain't getting that shit. Sorry.
I also kind of wonder, like, with Microsoft being willing to make so many concessions on the Activision side, if it isn't really Blizzard... Maybe King, but I feel like it's Blizzard that they really want. Like I feel like Microsoft really wants Diablo, Warcraft, Overwatch, and that whole thing. Even though I don't know, I'm hearing that maybe Overwatch 2 isn't performing at the level that people thought it would. I don't know. I feel like a lot of that stuff I'm looking at is kind of slanted based on people's biases one way or the other. So I'm not sure what the facts really say about that. But it seemed like Overwatch 2 at least had a huge launch. But admittedly, they just had a new season start and I could care less. But I'm playing a different Blizzard product, so maybe it's all the same. As long as I'm doing something, right? But anyway, my point is I wonder if it's Blizzard that Microsoft really has their eye on. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. Like, we'll have to see what happens with this whole thing anyways, because, like, what's going to happen to Activision, like, if this doesn't go through?
I don't know. They get bought by Tencent, and then I believe that would actually be worse. Going to our chat over twitch.tv/VOGNetwork, Mike Def says, I don't agree with the FTC. I understand why people would be fine with it, but this is a good move for everyone, at least involved. SG100 Matt says, this will take a lot longer now that these antitrust suits that are coming, it's really not going to be finalized one way or another until 2024. So DJ Rama S says, PlayStation is keeping Sony afloat.
Yeah.
And also adds, Microsoft teamed up with Crunchyroll for free trial subs. She-Hulk 10 says, I would rather Xbox spend the $70 billion on a new super game and studio from the ground up. To be fair, Microsoft did buy a boatload of studios.
They have a lot of those.
They do have a lot of those. And I'm not sure we're seeing oodles and oodles of things coming out of it yet, but I think we're going to, like, I think it's coming. And we've seen a few. Obviously we had like Psychonauts 2, you know, and we'll see some more. But to be fair, they did spend a lot of money on like smaller studios to try to build them some new things. I can't see.
Happens.
What's that?
Whatever happens, I'd like to see, though, that the biggest offenders get canned immediately.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's the number one thing I can't wait for, is for Bobby Kotick to be unceremoniously removed. I mean, it sucks because he's probably going to get a big payout because of contracts and stuff, but
not just him.
Oh, no. Yeah, not just him. But he's like that. It's just like E. Broom Plusk is not the only problem at Bird App right now, but he's the one you want to see go most of all. But he has a team of enablers, just like Bobby Kotick does. So I don't know. Anyway,
the thing is that in the long run, though, all of these people that are like this are a symptom of a bigger problem.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And that. Yeah.
When you start holding those people accountable, the problem starts getting resolved.
Yeah. And that's, I've referenced that on previous episodes too, is that this is a game industry problem. That's why this whole issue became much bigger than Blizzard.
This is much more than a gaming industry issue.
Oh, sure.
This is institutionalized.
Sure.
In our
I'll agree
culture.
With that. Yeah.
It's just the fact that it comes out in the biggest, quote, boys club that there is, but you see it all over the place in the corporate world.
Yeah. It's exacerbated by the gaming industry.
This
I would
is
say.
What it's like to work as a female. Mm-hmm. Just saying. It doesn't matter where you go. Even the most enlightened of companies, you're still going to encounter sexism. It's there. It's ingrained. Mm-hmm. You have to start holding people to the fire in the worst possible way to get it to change.
I don't disagree. Going back to chat with more comments. I can't see in chat says, as a new Xbox gamer, I want it to go through, but I also don't want gaming to be like the movie and TV industry. I don't like having content locked behind subscriptions. Subscriptions add up. And that's maybe a reference towards what I'm assuming is Xbox Game Pass and how a lot of, you know, stuff is being invested in that. And we kind of see the whole like Netflix of gaming type of contest going on there. So I get that. SG100Matt says, Overwatch is still a seller in terms of the esports aspect. The game still does well on the streamed tournament circuit. Oh, maybe Microsoft wants Overwatch League. That could very well be possible.
Well,
I don't know.
Blizzard doesn't want Overwatch League, so I mean.
But I can understand where maybe if you have that infrastructure that Overwatch League has set up, maybe Microsoft can leverage that into getting more eyes on something like, I don't know, Halo Reach. I'm reaching, admittedly. But, you know, something that, you know, gets, you know, other Microsoft competitive games that they would like to have at that same level. I don't know. I acknowledge I'm reaching a little bit, but, you know, who knows? Only Microsoft knows for sure what their motivations are. All right. Well, let's talk about our motivations and the types of games that we have been playing this week in a segment called How Was Your Gaming Week? And we will start with Dark Sakura. How was your gaming week?
It was all right. It was the usual stuff, Dead by Daylight. Lots of funny shenanigans. I've been playing a lot with Gwen and with one of my newer streamer buddies, Raven McPhierce. Really fun. I have been playing my stupid Wordscapes game like pretty hardcore lately. I have been playing a lot of pinball, just, you know, the stuff we have in my house. I actually tried to play some Twilight Zone the other day and I forgot that it doesn't have a ball save. Oops. I played some Cult of the Lamb. I've actually beaten it, and now I've gotten all of the tarot cards. So I'm trying to figure out what I have left to do in the game other than start a new playthrough. And I'm on the third leg of Final Fantasy V. We're just about to go to the Fork Tower. And then after that's done, I was going to put it up between Star Ocean and Emerald Dragon. But if I played Emerald Dragon, I would want to play the PC Engine version. So I'd have to set out the capture and then find a patch that I can run on, run simultaneously with my disc copy. Because I do own an original Emerald Dragon. It's not a very expensive game. But I think Star Ocean would be a lot easier to do. So I'm probably going to be playing Star Ocean next.
Nice. All right. We'll move on to Loki. I know we talked about the convention you were at this weekend, but what else for your gaming week?
It was pretty much just Jumpman and Minecraft. It was all Minecraft this week. Just working on editing for different videos and stuff like that.
I was going to say, this was your big week off to produce,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know, like go? It was, but it didn't, I don't feel as productive as I should have been. Even though, like, I wasn't wasting time. It just, it doesn't feel like I got a lot done. I was hoping to get multiple videos done, but I got a short out, which I mean, technically was done weeks ago, but I published that and that did okay. But yeah, I need to do more shorts because that seemed to be, it's a really quick, like 3,000 views, and I got like a few subs out of it too. So nice. It's not bad. It's good for getting noticed. And then I've been working on the episode for the modded series, which I'm almost done with. Hopefully I'll have that out either, it'll probably be tomorrow. And then I don't even know I'm going to work on for the SMP stuff for Channel 64. I know what I should work on, but I don't know if it's going to happen. I need to work on more of the Mega Base stuff. But I also have Vault Hunters I just started too that I haven't filmed anything in yet, or at least I've keep filming things and then deleting it because I can't. Windows updates decide to tweak on my audio and video settings, which is fun. So like I kept one, my audio was recording incredibly quiet to the point where I couldn't even hear it. Thanks to it enabling some stupid program that I don't normally have launch anyways. It's like some companion program that came with my I guess it's an audio driver because we don't have sound cards anymore. And then like OBS changed settings where the there was an audio delay, like a 2-second audio delay that was unfixable because Windows 10, when it updated, switched my audio from 44 to 48. And so it was annoying. So I finally figured that out and tracked that down, but it was getting to the point where like I'd have to sync my mic audio and the video, then sync the video and its own audio to get it to work right. And that takes, you know, multiply that times the number of clips I have in there, and it just really compounds and adds a lot more time to everything. So now that it's all fixed, it should be more streamlined going forward. It's just, you know, figuring that out over the few days took a while. I had fun this week. And I'm going to have some more time throughout, you know, the next couple weeks because, you know, we have the holidays. Yep. So 4-day weekends and stuff like that. I should be able to work on a little bit more of that as well. I'm hoping to get more into the groove. And then I know we've got some exciting things around the corner with, you know, the SMPs. So, you know, New Year will be fun too. And then my Minecraft, I mean, Mojang's been super quiet about their update, so who knows when that's coming, so we may have tons of time left before we have to reset the server or something.
You know, you were talking about YouTube Shorts. Have you tried syndicating your content on TikTok as well?
I know. TikTok and Instagram stories and stuff like that.
It's taken me years to figure it out, but I finally got sucked into TikTok a little bit. And I will tell you, that algorithm for discovering stuff, it does it better than any other platform, let me tell you. And I'm seeing stuff as I go through my feed. I see stuff with like zero likes and zero comments. So I know occasionally it pushes stuff that it thinks I'm going to like in there. And that's how these things are getting lots of views. Because people don't just watch one TikTok. They watch like 20 all at once. And so they'll see some that are from their usuals, and then it sneaks some new ones in there. So it's interesting. That whole TikTok space is very interesting to me. So
I need to sit down like and just knock out, because I set up a template with this first one, so it took a little bit longer to make the short. But I have a template now set up where I should be able to just go back to my older videos and start with just like the build time lapses and condense those down to a minute, and then just upload those and schedule them out. And then I'll have to go through some of the other stuff and find clips that I like funny things or something like that, and do all that. Like this first one was my first major build that was on my first SMP. So that's like over a year old now. It's like almost 2 years old. And so I'm starting there and kind of going more towards current. I may mix it up. I don't know. It might not be in order, but yeah, I got like really good engagement. Like, you know, I think we got 8 subs and about 3,100 views in like a day.
Yeah.
And it's really weird how the algorithm works with it. It'll push it and then it's gone. Like there's no engagement after that. So, yeah. But you know, you just do those every once in a while.
Even 8 new subs from a short is great. Like I'm excited as fuck if I get 2 new follows on a Twitch stream. I mean, yeah, I'm sure Jamie's in a similar boat where it's like you get 2 new follows. It's like, I had a great stream today.
And that's the thing. It's most frustrating about YouTube is like, I will put in like a month worth of effort for a video or something like that and see like almost nothing from it. And then I'll have one of my, you know, server partners, he'll start a hardcore series where he's basically just building and he gets 600 subs out of it. Wow. And just an immense amount of watch time from just like a video. And it's not like I'm not jealous. It's just like it's very frustrating because you don't know, like you would say, okay, well, what is the algorithm looking for? Like, I will do that thing, you don't know and nobody knows. And it's like you just keep trying things and see what sticks. But
I'm telling you, what it's looking for is short content. That's going to be what gets you. I mean, I'm not saying specifically for the YouTube algorithm, but like short content and leveraging that to the places like YouTube Shorts, TikTok, and that sort of thing. That yeah. will. And honestly, we need to take our own fucking advice and put clips of this show on those platforms as well. You know, we haven't. Technically, we have a VOG network TikTok. We just haven't used it yet. Keyword yet. But it's there. You can go follow it. I really think that's the secret, because my opinion is when it comes to 20-minute YouTube videos, you're going to watch the things that you already know you like. When it comes to minute and a half shorts, you're more willing to sit there and watch random things that are put in front of you because you're just binging them. I think that's a real key difference. But
right.
Anyway.
But yeah, and it depends. Like, it's just like the type of content. Some people don't really want to watch S&Ps right now. But then there's also some people that will watch the same thing over and over, or the same person over and over, no matter how
poor there's something for everyone. There's something for everyone.
Yeah, it's all about tricking the algorithm to get it to the most impressions, yeah. And it's just a percentage game at that point. Yeah.
All right, my gaming week, not terribly exciting compared to previous weeks. I still am on my Warcraft bullshit. I got to level 64 on my Orc Priest, which, by the way, is a new combination. Orcs couldn't be priests before this expansion, my priestess, because I'm a lady orc, named Super Sprode, one of my favorite freeze pop songs there ever was. So I recycled an old rogue or something just to steal the name. So I've still been on that, and that's been fun because I've been in the new expansion areas, which are it's weird because they're very vertical. They're very flying based, which they came up with a new form of flying for this, the dragon, which is the name of the expansion, Dragonflight. So it's interesting. It took me a minute to warm up to it, but now that I've warmed up to it, I'm like, I kind of like it for being able to explore. I think it's a good medium between they don't want you to just fly around in the zone and finish all the quests instantly, and have a sense of you're not wasting time walking everywhere. It's interesting. Other games, I've been continuing on my AR gaming stuff, specifically Pokemon Go. Had a 2-day community day this weekend, and I had some shinies to catch up on, so I went pretty hard. At least yesterday, I walked 10,000 steps. Today was harder because I knew I had OLR at 6 o'clock, so I couldn't stay out. But I think I got like 4 or 5 shinies today. I got a lot more yesterday. I think I still don't have a shiny Litwick. I couldn't do that community day for some reason. I still don't have a shiny Litwick, so I'm going to have to beg somebody else for one that got like 40 of them. But I think I filled in the other shinies I needed. Starly, I remember, was one. I think that was when I had COVID, was Starly Day. And I was able to get a couple of those today, so I feel better about that now. And then I've also been playing Pikmin Bloom. Had some very controversial changes this week. I'm not going to go too into the weeds because I know not a ton of people play Pikmin Bloom, but I've really enjoyed it as far as like a passive type of experience. They changed the mushroom combat system though, and they they really did not make popular changes. I get what they were going for, but they made battles that used to take 5 minutes take 7 days. That's not an exaggeration. Literally seven. It's a complete change to the system. I get why they were doing it, because they were trying to encourage people to get to see each other actually battling together and stuff like that, but they went a little too hard to the extreme. On the plus side, the team heard the feedback within 2 days and cut down all the times by either 50% or 75%, depending on the level of mushroom. And I think it's much more reasonable now. So I think Pikmin Bloom's in an interesting place right now. I'm still enjoying it, but I also think there's some nuances with the system they need to do. Like, they need to have a way where you are required to drop a certain amount of Pikmin in there, because it's too easy to exploit the system and just drop one Pikmin in there. And then, but you're also robbing yourself of leveling up Pikmin that way. I don't know. It's just a weird thing. And then if 5 people are on a mushroom, that mushroom needs to phase out and a new one brought in, so 5 more people can jump on it, because it's making play for the game in some places like Tokyo, I hear, like, impossible, because people jump on a mushroom and then nobody else can do it. So anyway, there's still some little nuances. I'm not going to go too deep in the weeds, because I know not a lot of people play Pikmin Bloom, but I do, and I still like it as a walking incentivizer. And I'm still level 69, but I'm only like 15,000 steps away from level 70. So sadly, I won't get to say that too much longer. What else have I played? Oh, I played an interesting thing today. Because I saw Alan playing it, and I was like, oh, I forgot this is a thing. Oh, this is free if I already own the game? Okay, cool, I'll do this. So I got Portal for RTX, the new version of Portal that they released with, like, the souped-up graphics, because I was like, I have a fancy new computer with a fancy new graphics card. Let me try this. It doesn't run great in 4K, but on Alan's machine, he has – so Alan actually has a really nice monitor – but it only runs Ultra HD or 2K, but it's a really, like, pretty finish. Like, it has that slight curve to it. It's really bright. I've watched him play Fortnite on it. It looks really good. And I watched him play the Portal RTX game, and it looked pretty good. But he got a much better frame rate than I did, because mine's in 4K, and it's kind of ugly. And his is in 2K, and it runs pretty decently. So that was, but it was, it's really nice to look at. I played like the first couple stages, and then I was like, okay, I didn't, it isn't worth it to have the nicer graphics, but isn't it nice to feel like my very expensive investment is already outdated by that game? My very expensive investment.
It's not just that game. It's a lot of games. Our ray tracing is still not optimized well enough for even like fair. Modern cards. Like, even like on a 4090, I think with that game, it doesn't run great. It's just the game.
Fair. So,
and a lot of games it seems like ray tracing is just not worth it.
Yeah.
it's not.
The only other thing I touched this week was Tetris Effect Connected, because I've been going into the Epic Store every day to get the free game, because, you know, they started their 15 days of holiday downloads, whatever it is, because they had Horizon Chase Turbo yesterday, which was a pretty good one. And usually the December 25th one, I think, and the very last one are usually like, they gave away the entire Tomb Raider trilogy last year, if I remember right. So I'm hoping there'll be a big one that I don't have yet that they'll give away. But I was bringing up the Epic Store, and I was like, oh, I don't think I've played Tetris Effect since I got this newer computer and the 4K monitor and everything. It was very pretty. I was very happy I fired that up. I was like, oh, this is nice comfort food as far as game goes. I love some Tetris Effect. I really hope there's another one. We haven't really heard about what Mizuguchi's working on now, have we? So he's kind of, I would assume he's working on another Tetris Effect game. Like, the last one was huge, but I don't know. I guess nothing's for sure in that department. Who knows? So, all right. Otherwise, that was pretty much my gaming week. So we will move on, and let's get into some news from the week. Loki, what's going on in video game news?
He must finally do it. He's going to make a movie about Death Stranding. And it's going to have a different story, which is interesting. It's going to be set around a different set of characters, but still in the same universe. And that's good, because I don't understand what the hell's going on in Death Stranding. So it'll be nice when they dumb it down.
Loki, you actually have to play the game to understand a little bit, at least.
I mean, that is true. That would probably help.
It would help.
Bit. But yes, yeah, so he's finally going to be working on a movie in partnership with Kojima Productions and Barbarian executive producer Alex Leibovici's Hammerstone Studios. Didn't really go into much detail there, then it's going to have new elements and characters. Basically saying, we're thrilled and honored to have an opportunity to partner with the brilliant and iconic Hideo Kojima in his first film adaptation. Unlike other big-budget tentpole video game adaptions, this will be something far more intimate and grounded. I'm sorry, that game's not grounded at all. Our goal is to redefine what video game adaptations could be. When you have the creative and artistic freedom, this will be a film that's authentic Hideo Kojima production. It's going to be insane.
He's not going to be able to make a 2.5 hour movie. He's not. It's going to be like, oh, nope. We had to split it into two movies. Like it's
there's no way.
No way.
I will go see it. It's going to be crazy.
ZenMonkey11 says, give me the release date of that movie so I can plan to do something else that weekend. Well, who's to say it's going to be in theaters? I mean, I honestly think the movie is going to be so long, he ends up doing a Netflix, Hulu, HBO, whatever it is show. So I think it ends up becoming a series, to be quite honest. But we'll see. We'll see. Who knows? So, Tiger Claw in chat says they need to get Norman Reedus involved. Well, he's going to be in the sequel. Right. So I wonder if this doesn't tie into this, because the sequel, I don't see how it can be. I don't know. There's a lot of weird places they could go with the sequel, but they're obviously putting Norman Reedus in it. So it's, I don't know, be interesting.
Yeah. We'll have to see, I guess.
Yeah. Let's see. Fifth Dream says the movie will be generated in engine and cost $70 to play on PlayStation 5. I don't know if you can screen it at the cinema if it does that. Who knows? As Joan Hunter Matt says, yeah, he can't fit it in a 2 to 3 hour movie. I feel like a Death Stranding series would have been good on HBO Max, but let's be real, WB Discovery isn't making that happen. No, that's true. How about Disney Plus? How about Death Stranding on Disney Plus? All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about I mentioned Tomb Raider during the Epic Game Store giveaways. And Tomb Raider is going to be continuing. You know, we haven't heard a lot out of the series in a little bit, and that's likely because they are going to start a new trilogy or do something new with it. But it has been confirmed that Crystal Dynamics is working on Lara Croft's biggest and most expansive adventure yet, because it's being built in Unreal Engine 5. Oh, that was something they had said before. They're making it in Unreal Engine 5. I do remember that when they announced Unreal Engine. But now what we've learned is that Amazon is going to be publishing it. So Crystal Dynamics is developing, Amazon is publishing, and Unreal Engine 5 is being used. It's still a few years out, but it is going to come to multiple platforms. Amazon does say it will have all of the franchise's hallmarks. So I'm assuming that means the elaborate death scenes that are a part of Lara Croft's No Good, Very Bad Day. I'm assuming we're going to still see some of that in the game. We'll see. It's not going to be a remake either. So it's continuing Lara's story as well. It's not a new reboot. So I guess it's not really a new trilogy, but maybe a continuation trilogy. I guess it's the Scream 4 or the Scream 5 even of the Lara Croft Tomb Raider recent games. I don't know. But anyway, even though Embracer got the intellectual property rights to Tomb Raider and so forth, this is just, you know, Crystal Dynamics has made the agreement with Amazon for this. In a statement, the head of the studio, Scott Amos, said, Crystal Dynamics has an extraordinary opportunity following our acquisition by Embracer to redefine what a publishing relationship is for Tomb Raider. Transformative is what we're looking for, and with Amazon Games, we found a team that shares our creative vision, ambitions, and values for a Lara Croft universe across the spectrum of possibilities. They're uniquely positioned to rewrite what publishing and development collaborations are, and we're eager to forge this new path together, starting with building the biggest and best Tomb Raider game yet. And of course, we know that's all the fluff speak. We need to see what the game really looks like to be convinced. Although, you know, Amazon's got a cloud service that you probably forgot about. They have their Luna services out there. Wouldn't it be a smart thing for them to do if they were to put like the demo? I'm not saying they have to release the game on Luna. I mean, they should, but even just put the demo. If you want people just to check out Luna, put the first demo on the cloud service for just like a couple days before you put on PS5 or something. I'm telling you, people will check out Luna just to fire up that demo and play it. I think that would be a smart idea. But I've also said on a previous episode, I believe Amazon to be an extremely siloed company right now. So I'm not expecting it to happen. It's just, you know,
waiting for them to get Dead by Daylight.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Luna doesn't have that, huh? So
yeah, that way I won't have to use. I mean, Boosteroid is great, just not the most stable of connections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, you would think that Amazon has a good relationship with Behavior because you see all the giveaways in Amazon Prime Gaming or whatever it's called. Which, again, why that is completely separate from Luna, I don't understand. But Amazon is siloed, clearly. So it's just weird. So, anyway. Fifth Dream in chat says, is anything an Unreal Engine 5 besides homebrew demos? Give it a little more time. You know, it takes a couple years to make a AAA game. And that's why you're seeing the small stuff's coming out relatively fast. The things don't need a couple years. But it's going to take a couple years in the oven until you start seeing the fruits of this, you know, things like Tomb Raider and so forth. And I'm going to guess they're going to need to be able to get away from the Xbox S to do this. I think the Xbox S, and let's be real, the PlayStation 4 are also kind of holding, because right now, most games still release on like PlayStation 4, and pretty much Microsoft has a mandate that everything that they release on X has to release on S. And I think there's going to come a time when that gets separated, probably whenever Microsoft releases a Y or a Z or whatever they call it. I don't know. But they're probably going to stop supporting the S in the same way at that point. Now, for those of you that own an S, I don't think you'll be screwed, because enter Microsoft's cloud will absolutely be functional on the S. And that's how they'll continue to let you play a lot of those games. That's, you know, they haven't said anything. That's just, you know, fortune teller Rob here, but I don't see how they don't do that for the future. We'll see. Dark Tetsuya also points out they had the Matrix Universe demo. Yeah, that was the big showy offy thing for Unreal Engine 5 for sure. Dijarama S says, I legit think that Microsoft could update the firmware to handle 4K on the Xbox Series S. Maybe, but is it going to run like Portal RTX? Because then maybe don't. But give people the option. They have the option on a PC game. Give people the option. No, I like that idea. All right, moving on. Dark Sakura.
So I'm sure anyone who's been following what I've been playing recently knows I've been playing Final Fantasy V, and I am not playing the Pixel Remasters. But certainly a good number of my friends have been playing the Pixel Remasters. Like I know Le Pen was playing through the Final Fantasy games. And there will be a limited standard and then a 35th anniversary special edition Final Fantasy Pixel Remaster, which is 1-6. And the anniversary edition actually looks pretty stellar. It's coming to PS4 and Switch in 2023. This comes with a bunch of shit. It's awesome. I kind of want it. It is going to be, for the standard, is $74.99, and that's a Squinix store exclusive. And then the big anniversary bundle, also an exclusive, is $259.99. Now, the standard comes with the 1-6 Pixel Remaster Collection, which is a physical copy of all the games for PS4 or Switch. And then the really super deluxe awesome version has the physical copies again, anniversary edition goodie box, a bonus lenticular sleeve for the game package, a 2-disc vinyl record set with arranged game music and the cover artwork done by Shibuya Kazuko, a compiled art book showing the pixel art, and then 8 pixel art style characters in window packaging. It's looking pretty hardcore epic. That's a lot of good stuff that comes with that. The pins are also like super cute. You've got like your white mage and your black mage, and you've got some characters from the other games. You got your fighter and all of that, and it's looking pretty nice.
I think I could be wrong. I think it's already gone. I think
Is it?
Yeah,
because okay. The orders just started.
Yeah, no. Shane is complaining in chat. Shadley Lynn's in our chat saying, putting the physical copies up in the middle of the night, charging $25 for shipping, and making them only available through their online store is just garbage. Screw Square Enix for how they're handling the pixel remasters for consoles. So, and Dark Tetsuya says, I'm seriously hoping for individual digital releases. I hope it's not exclusive to this limited physical edition. Oh, I don't. Square would literally be leaving money on the table. They have to have a digital option somewhere. I would be flabbergasted. You're not buying it?
No, I have the original. Why would I want the remasters?
They're cute. I don't know. I understand they're a little pricey. I don't think I would pay this high ticket price for all the collector's stuff for them. But I enjoyed the 4 remaster.
I have so many copies of 4 on different items.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have like the PlayStation collection, and I have the cartridges for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, you know, other ways of playing them. I don't see the pixel remasters would be like if someone had no access to the original cartridges and right. wanted to play something that looks kind of like the original did. Also, the high-res pixels kind of freak me out. I need them to be old school. I need my old pixels.
I will say this, especially if they do piecemeal them. I think you could make a case. Well, there's no right or wrong answer. Every gamer makes their own choice of their purchases. But I think there could be a stronger case for specifically Final Fantasy III. And Jason kind of referenced it in the intro there tonight that technically Final Fantasy III has never been released in the U.S. in two dimensions. The very first time we got Final Fantasy III was that 3D
iOS.
DS. Well, there was it was DS first, and then the iOS version came after that. And so we've only ever really had it in its 3D form. It was even on the Ouya in that 3D form. Remember that? That was a big deal because Square Enix put something on the Ouya. It was Final Fantasy III. So this is the first time we've had it in two dimensions, and that means the first time with an official English translation, anyway, in two dimensions. So I would say that one in particular, I think, has the strongest case going for it. Because if you don't really care for the 3D ones, I don't know. I could kind of give or take them. I understand the perks for Final Fantasy IV in the 3D, and some people were really into it. I still think the best version of Final Fantasy IV was the one they did on the PSP. Was it the PS Vita? It was.
Disagree.
I think it was the PSP.
The best one is the original.
Yeah, that's everyone's entitled to their opinion. But I love the one on the PSP. So
PSP ones are good.
Yeah, but I also understand. The originals absolutely have their charm, especially, you know, when you compare the Japanese original to what they actually released in the U.S., which was, you know, Final Fantasy Easy Mode, which is all I ever knew for years.
I was
playing
through the Japanese one.
Yeah, yeah.
When I did my thing, just it was a translated Japanese ROM,
mm-hmm.
and it had, like, all the censorship fixed and everything, and the original dialogue as closely translated as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like the spoony bard line was more like, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah, it was a lot harsher.
SSO 100 Matt says there's a rumor they're going to fix the font in these versions for Switch and PS4. That is the by far and wide the biggest problem with the pixel remasters, is the font sucks. And it's going to especially suck on a large TV if you're sitting in the back of the room. So I do hope that is true, that they're looking at redoing those fonts. I really hope that's more than just a rumor, but that's probably at the top of people's wish list there. And going into chat for some other comments, Shadley Lynn Shane says the regular edition is gone. The collector's edition is still up for like $260 before shipping. Yeah, no, I'm not paying
that
kind of money.
That's what I had said.
Yeah. No, I'm not. It's too much. Too much. But I mean, it's a lot of cool crap, but it's, I don't need it. Shadley Lynn also says, I just want a physical cart for the Switch for them. And SSJ 100 Matt says same. I think I might get the PlayStation version. I don't know. I kind of love trophies. I don't know. That's kind of what I want. But I also don't do a lot of portable gaming. And I know some of y'all do a lot more gaming on the go. Even the Switch stuff, I end up playing on my monitor or my TV. So it's, you know, whatever. But I'm glad they're finally coming. It took them long enough to announce this. I really would have thought this would have been like a year ago. So it's about time, I guess. All right, moving on, Loki.
All right. Well, Epic is shutting down some older game servers for games you may recognize. Many, unfortunately, happen to be Harmonix games. So we have Dance Central 1, 2, and 3 are all being shut down, as well as numerous Rock Band games. So we have Green Day Rock Band, Rock Band 1, 2, and 3, The Beatles Rock Band, all being shut down. And then, of course, with Unreal Gold, Unreal 2, The Awakening, Unreal Tournament 2003, 2004, and Unreal Tournament 3, and Unreal Tournament Game of the Year Edition as well. And then there's some other random ones there in there. Supersonic Acrobatic Rocket Powered Battle Cars, great name. Monsters Probably Stole My Princess as well being shut down. And 1000 Tiny Claws. So this is all being shut down, though, January 24th of 2023. So play online while you can. Rock Band 4 is going to still be online, though. And the Dance Central VR online multiplayer will remain available for now.
I didn't even know that Dance Central VR was a thing.
I did not either.
Yeah. To be honest, like, it's sad to hear that these are going offline, but to be honest, I kind of assumed they already were. Like, I thought they had pulled the servers for Rock Band 2 and 3, like, not long after 4's release. So I was like, oh, they're even still up and running? That's cool. But yeah, it still hits in end of an era type of way, I suppose.
Yeah. And there are a few more things too. So, apparently players are going to lose access to the following titles, on their removal dates as well. Battle Breakers is going to be removed December 30th, and they're going to refund players for any in-game purchases made via Epic direct payments 180 days prior to today. Unreal Tournament Alpha is being shut down January 24th. Rock Band Blitz on January 24th. And the Rock Band Companion app also January 24th. And Sync Space on January 24th.
Man, I wish Rock Band Blitz would come back. That was such a good game. It's a bummer. Let's see. S200 Matt says, keeping the servers going for 20 years on some of those Unreal games is pretty generous, to be honest. I'm kind of bummed and also surprised. Unreal Tournament 2004, that was my big multiplayer game in my college years. What I'm surprised most about is that the servers were still running. Yeah, so it's kind of the same thing.
And they also, this probably impacts Jamie a little bit more, but they apparently have removed the Mac and Linux versions of Hot Tofu Boyfriend and Hot Tofu Boyfriend Holiday Star.
I wonder why. It's weird.
No idea.
They're old-ass games. It's already compatibility for the first one for Mac and iOS have already been removed.
I think they're still on Steam, though. I think this is like Epic Direct or something like that. So maybe.
Interesting.
They are.
Speaking of Harmonix, a reminder, we kind of mentioned it in the parody bump, but that isn't on the podcast, and I don't know, it might be too late by the time the podcast is out, but reminder, Fuser's gone tomorrow, December 19th, which is Monday, so, and I don't know what time of day it gets pulled, so it is, I noticed it was $19.99 on Steam, and if you do own Fuser and you haven't done it yet and you're listening live, do it now. Because you'll forget otherwise. Open the game and get the packs in the game that are like, it's the unlock everything for free. So it unlocks every, I don't think it unlocks the DLC songs, unfortunately. But I think as far as like cosmetics, outfits, things like that, somebody in chat can correct me if I'm wrong, but I was seeing that was going around is that they have like a everything pack that's free. And I think as far as, you know, again, like in-game items and that sort of thing, that's what they're, giving away for free, and you will not be able to access it after tomorrow because the store will be gone. So just a reminder on that front for those of you that own the game Fuser. Even if you think you'll never play it again, grab them just in case. I think it's a good idea. So ZenMonkey11 in chat says, this is why I don't like to buy games with an online expiration date. The refund thing is a great idea. Well, the only time I think we've seen refunds is Stadia. Dark Soccer can attest to that. And I think that's a rarity, to be honest.
It was a nice little rarity there. It farted rainbows all over my bank account.
Mm-hmm. Shane says it unlocks the fuser unlocks the diamond stuff, which was on a rotation, I believe, weekly. It does include songs, but they are Harmonix artist songs. So yeah, there's a variety of free DLC also in Steam, which I'm imagining is the same stuff. So yeah, I would grab everything you can before tomorrow's the end of Fuser. So for those that enjoyed that. All right. Let's move on and talk about this next story, which has to do with Armored Core 6, which turned a lot of heads when it was announced at the Game Awards. Armored Core 6 will have versus multiplayer. I don't know if you're excited about that, Loki, but I know you're a fan of mechs, and yeah. Well, and I'm excited about this. And what it won't have is Souls-like gameplay. That is being confirmed as well. So it's, you know, a different series. Even though From Software is known for other stuff now.
It would have been cool, though, I think.
I don't know about that. But anyway, IGN had an interview with Yamamura, who is the executive producer of the game. He's saying, yes, we do plan to have a versus mode similar to previous Armed Core titles where you'll be able to customize your mech and take that fully customized mech into battle with others. But we will reveal more details about this at a later date. But also, being said, story mode is the priority for this. Versus is going to be a separate thing. Multiplayer will not be part of the story. So even though in Armored Core 5, there were more multiplayer options, such as teams of 20 facing off to defend and take territory. So we'll see what comes of that. 2023 is the anticipated release of Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon. PS4, PS5, Xbox Series, and Xbox One even, and PC via Steam. The last release was 2012, was Armored Core 5. So it's been some time, if you weren't aware, for these games. All right, let's move on. I think we're to Dark Sakura.
Believe that we are. This is... I think a long time coming. Well, by a long time, I mean things that people have really pushed for. Twitch had basically added in a bunch of charities that were based off of items approved by PayPal Giving Fund. And among them was one called the LGB Alliance, which for all even what its name implies, it is actually an anti-trans hate group. And so with a lot of push from other Twitch users and a big, upvote on one of their remove hate group, forum posts that received over 16,000 upvotes, Twitch said that they removed it, and they're quoted with this. Twitch does not allow charities that violate our hateful conduct policies on Twitch, whose organization and leaderships engage in or promote behaviors that violate our off-service policy. Inclusion on this list is not an endorsement from Twitch. However, we regularly review the list and remove organizations that violate our policies. There are still a few over there, and it's pretty clear that there's not like a true vetting process for any of these. I think it's just a mass approval, again, based on whatever PayPal Giving approves. But at the very least, it's a response. Maybe they'll take it to heart more for the future.
Yeah, and if I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe LGB Alliance is more based in the UK as well. I only heard of it when I was on Twitter, and I'm not there anymore. But I also know that Lady Voldemort probably was involved with that somehow, because you know how she is, unfortunately. And it's obviously, like, as somebody who is G, it's just really gross that you would not support RT, you know, brothers and sisters and siblings, because like we're all in it together. And it's just, I do not understand that mentality whatsoever. And it's really gross.
Us divided will fall.
Yeah. Right. It's really gross what the organization pushes. So it's just, you know, I used to see some of that crap on Twitter, just because, you know, usually it was quote tweets of people dragging them and the other things like that, which, you know, you're still amplifying it. So I wish you wouldn't do that. But, you know, it's I just hope nobody I know would be involved with something like that, because we're you know, trans men are men and trans women are women, and we're all in this together. And it's just, yeah, It's
and
gross.
And being non-binary is a true thing.
Of course, yeah. So yeah.
You are who you are. Be your true self. And if anybody says that you're not valid, kick them in the shin really hard.
Agree. All right. I don't normally advocate for violence, but...
You see how that feels? Well, that's how I feel emotionally. So shut the fuck up, sit down, and drink your goddamn tea.
You know what? I bet Argentina kicked a lot of shins today. So, you know what? It is what it is. All right. Moving on. Let's get into... And that was a soccer joke, or a football joke for the rest of the world.
Okay, I quoted Sid from Final Fantasy VII.
All right. Moving on. Where are we at? Loki.
So Guerrilla Games has confirmed that they are working on an online adaptation or online project in the Horizon universe. It's being worked on, I guess, they are advertising open positions in their Amsterdam office. And it says, we're looking for talented people for Horizon single player, online project, and external project teams. So... No word on what that is yet, but maybe another live service game. Yay.
Oh, boy.
We'll have to see, I guess. But there's something coming.
I think you're right on the money. It's a live service game. They want something that can keep on giving in that regard. So
I haven't, wasn't good enough for Sony to purchase, Destiny. We got to have more Destiny.
Well, one series you can get more and more of. In fact, this series has been going a long time. I remember playing these games. I think these originated. Darksoccer may have to correct me here because it was a CD-based system and I didn't have it back in the day. I want to say it was on maybe Turbo? I don't remember. But it's the Ys series.
Oh, yeah, the Ys games were... also, Super Nintendo?
Yeah, I remember them on Super Nintendo, but I don't think that's where it started. They started on a CD-based system, didn't they?
I'm pretty sure that PC and the first Ys books 1 and 2 came out on PC Engine. I'll have to do a little bit of digging, because I think the first two came out individually on MSX.
Ah.
I'm going to say?
Yeah.
I know it was done by Nihon Falcom.
Yeah, S2100 Matt says PC Engine CD-ROM in 1989 and TurboGrafx CD. That sounds right. I think it was a TurboGrafx thing here. So,
yeah, it was the PC 8801.
Mm, okay.
That was it. I remembered it was on one of the computer systems and I wanted to say MSX, but no, it was the NEC PC 8801.
Well, here we are all these years later, and the series is still going. By the way, there are a lot of people that think this is called WISE, because it's capital Y, lowercase s, and so there's a lot of people that call this series WISE. So it's
Ys.
Yeah. So even I know that pronunciation. That's telling you something. It's been in gaming for a long time.
I didn't know it as a child, but,
Yeah, no, I didn't know it when I was younger either, so it is what it is. So, Ys or Wise to our childhood self is still going, and Ys is up to
come out, by the way, on MSX too. Just saying, that's why I was thinking of it.
Yeah, they ported a lot of those.
First game in its original release didn't come out on PC Engine, on what we know as the PC Engine, until it was a compilation with 1 and 2.
Got it. Well, they're on their 10th game now. Actually, the 10th game, Ys 10 or Ys X Nordix, was released on the PlayStation 4 in 2019. It is announced, though, that it will be coming out for more platforms in 2023. This is in celebration of the 35th anniversary of the series. So it's going to be coming out for the Nintendo Switch. We'll actually be getting that as well. The Nintendo Switch is also going to get Ys Memoir, The Oath in Fel'Ghana. This is a deepened action RPG, and they're calling this the definitive edition. This was originally released for the PSP in 2010. So this is one that would be pretty hard to get your hands on in 2022, but it will be coming out for the Switch. And this is considered one of the better games in the series. And they've also added voiceovers for the protagonist in the game, who's going to be voiced by Yuki Kaji. It will have a narration by Banju Ginja, and an even more dramatic story thanks to the voiceovers. So that's pretty cool. Also, refined versions of the illustrations for the characters during the story have been created. The classic versions for PSP and PC will also be included. You can switch between refined and classic. Continuing on with that for the Switch, apparently the same is also true of the soundtrack. So you can actually flip back and forth. So if you are, you know, you only want the classic version, you can do that. So that's pretty cool. So, yeah. A series you might have forgotten about, but it's been around for a very long time. That's a series I got to catch up on sometime. I remember.
Oh, I had a lot of fun on Wanderers from East.
Yeah.
The fourth one.
I remember playing one of them on Super Nintendo. I didn't particularly enjoy it at the time, but my tastes have changed a lot as I got older. I'd be very curious to revisit it at some point.
I want to say that the first one on Super Nintendo was Wanderers from East.
It probably was. Yeah, I think it was East 3. Yeah.
It had like some of my favorite music in it, though, and I beat that game pretty hard.
Well, while we're on the subject of classic games, there's no better time than now for this.
Now it's time to travel back to a simpler time, where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the classic game of the week.
And what did you pick tonight, Dark Sakura?
Picked Final Fantasy X-2.
Great.
And I had to make sure I hadn't done it yet, and I haven't. So, and for the record, I picked the good version with the music by Kota Kumi, because honestly, I like her voice a hell of a lot better. And I actually still know the lyrics to all the songs, and I've never bothered learning them in English. And also, you know, it's like with anything, you always like the first version that you played, and I imported this like right away. So Final Fantasy X-2 came out in 2003. It is a role-playing video game. It was developed by Square for PS2. And it's actually one of the first examples of a sequel to an in-universe Final Fantasy game. As in, typically in the past they were all standalone, and this one was an actual sequel. So this one is Yuna looking for Tidus, who was the hero from the game before, and also fighting political hardship while looking for these spheres that give them all kinds of magical girl transformation dress-up powers for fun. And it's also the first one to have an all-female cast and have just 3-player characters. And it does harken back to earlier Final Fantasy games where you had your character classes and job leveling. And it also is one of the few Final Fantasy games that has multiple endings. The soundtrack is amazing. It was done by Matsueda Noriko and Eguchi Takahito instead of Uematsu, but I mean, Uematsu is amazing, but this soundtrack is pretty damn amazing, too. And it was pretty successful. I mean, it sold over 5.4 million copies on PS2, won a bunch of awards, and it was the last Final Fantasy game to be released by Square before they merged with Enix in April of 2003. It was re-released in high def as Final Fantasy X/X-2 HD Remaster, which also came out on PlayStation 4 in 2015, Windows in 2016, and Xbox One and Nintendo Switch in 2019. And as of September 2021, the Final Fantasy X series had sold over 20.8 million units worldwide. It was even just by March 2022, it surpassed 21.1 million. So, the game is set in the same universe, of course, as 10. It is set in the world of Spira. This is 2 years after the events for Final Fantasy X. And, of course, with their major religion having been completely, you know, table flipped. they are picking up the pieces with the younger group going the way of technology and the older people trying to recreate their Yevon religion. And then, of course, there's another group that's selling tech to both sides to try to kill each other. But throughout all of this, there is a character spirit who is woken up and possesses certain people to try to end Spira because of how he and his lover Len died. In the Japanese version, by the way, Len was voiced by Kodo Kumi, who sang all the songs, which I think is awesome. But at any rate, a lot of the characters from the previous Final Fantasy X showed up as supporting roles, like Brother, Waka, and Lulu. There were other like new characters introduced, like there was the LeBlanc syndicate, the faction leaders, other sphere hunters, and then of course the main antagonist is Shuyin, who is the spirit of a soldier that died during the Makino War 1,000 years before. So it's for the seriousness of the story, there is a lot of lightheartedness that goes with it. And I think that there is definitely that message in of dealing with lost love and grief that really appealed to me. And with maybe a little bit of self-exploration through changing, you know, like I have see the dress sphere as a sort of like trying on a new identity until you find the one that fits. I mean, I don't know if that makes sense or not, but that's kind of how I saw it.
No, it totally does.
Yeah. And I mean, especially since Yuna herself, her whole identity had been wrapped up in being a summoner, and then there's nothing to summon. Well, in general, this is where her life is going, what she's done to give it purpose. I mean, she totally expected to die in the first game, you know? So at any rate, the development of this was in response to the a fan reaction to the Eternal Calm that was in the Japanese version of Final Fantasy X International that showed Yuna's life after the game. So X-2 was released shortly before the merger of Square and Enix, and they didn't really care for the name X-2, but they just took it because it's a sequel and it worked. This is actually Nojima Kazushige, the previous game's writer, was very skeptical about putting out a sequel, especially one with a happy ending. But they did it. They were given, according to Nomura, they were able to do the game in a year and a half at its standard scope because of all of the character models, the enemies, and location designs that were still usable. And then as for most of the creation of this, it was done in Autodesk Maya and Soft Image 3D. I know Maya, and it's a pain in the ass to use. So they said that the objective, the producers and directors said that the objective when designing the game was to embrace the concept of change as the main theme, which is what I was bringing up before. And, you know, they did make it more upbeat. That's definitely what they wanted to do. They wanted to show what a drastic change was in Spira. You know, because there's no summons, they redesigned some of the towns. They included different vehicles. You know, and they had different elements that came directly from Japanese pop culture. And then they wanted to bring in, they talked about bringing in Lulu as the third person instead of Pine. Because she would have been more of like an older sister rather than Yuna being able to stand on her own feet. But they did give her a baby in the previous game. As far as the music goes, I mean, like I said, it has a little bit more of a pop feel to it. And the songs Real Emotion and Sen no Kotoba were done by Kodakumi. And she also did the motion capture for Yuna's dancing and did the voice for Len. Of course, the U.S. one was done by Jade Villalon of Sweetbox, who released full versions of the songs for her Japanese release of Adagio. And Kodakumi released English versions of these on a CD single for Come With Me, although the translations for both are different. Hmm. But I mean, there was merchandise for everything. There was so much. There was an expanded version, which was the Final Fantasy X-2 International and the Last Mission, that had two new dress spheres, additional last mission location at the Yadanoki Tower, and the ability to capture and battle different monsters. And it had Tidus, Aron, and Seymour from Final Fantasy X. It was not released outside of Japan, even though it had the English voice track to use for the majority of the story, but I have that copy. And there were, you know, there were action figures and books and soundtracks and art books and strategy guides and all kinds and Ultimania guidebooks and all kinds of stuff. Hori, the peripheral gaming company, had controllers that were modeled after Yuna's tiny bee guns. These only came out in Japan. They were also re-released in the silver box with the release of the International and Last Mission. And then they also created a vertical stand for the PS2 with the Final Fantasy X-2 logo that lights up in blue when it's plugged in. And so, of course, there was the HD version that came out. It was worked with Kitase Yoshinori involved. And, you know, all of these releases of it were pretty well received. I mean, the soundtrack was kind of mixed because it kind of went on that J-pop front instead of with any input from Uematsu. EGM called it too bubbly, but what do they know? I mean, there's just way too many people that were complaining about missing the old guard. But this, the thing is that this game was meant to embody the new, you know, to indicate change, to show a change in the world, a change in people, personality, that type of thing. After this one came out, they finally did other direct sequels to Final Fantasy games, including Dirge of Cerberus, and then Final Fantasy IV The After Years, and two sequels to Final Fantasy XIII. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the other problem that people had with this game is that it was considered girly. And I think that the people who didn't like it because it was girly need to have their... I mean, I think that they're full of shit. So I'm not going to mince my words about it. But I really liked that with enough work, you could get a happy ending to this game. I mean, spoilers for how old game is this now? But in there's actually two extra endings where one of them, you get Tidus back. Like, the faith fully bring him back as a real boy. He's a real boy now. and then the other one, you have an extended conversation between him and Yuna in Xanarkand, where they talk about, you know, are you real? And it's like, well, yeah, as real as you think I am, I guess. You know, but it's a really interesting, you know, it's a very serious conversation for a lighthearted ending. But at any rate, I love this game. I much prefer the music in Japanese just because I was a big Kodakumi fan before this game came out. So I'm not going to say that the US the English versions are bad. I mean, they're great, and if I had heard them first, I might have liked them better, but it is what it is, so that's why I wanted to put up the Japanese copy, because that's the version I like best.
All right. There it is, your classic game of the week, Final Fantasy X-2. This is also interesting because I don't remember exactly the year this came out, but it must have been around...
2013.
It was 2013. It was really that far. I thought it was more around the time when this show had just started as a...
Sorry, 2003.
Okay, I was going to say, I thought it was around the time this show started as a podcast.
I don't know why I said 2013. Yeah. It was 2003.
Because I remember in an early episode of OLR, we were like, Jamie was saying it's 10-2, and I kept saying X-2. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to email Square. And they actually wrote back, and Square confirmed that it was 10-2 is the correct pronunciation of it. So it was just... kind of
and
fun.
I've been smug about it ever since.
Yeah, yeah, let me tell you about it. Yeah, so no, but it's kind of, you know, neat. But it was certainly unconventional naming. Like, you know, there was a part of me that always wondered, why didn't they just make this Final Fantasy 11 and call what ultimately was Final Fantasy 11 Final Fantasy Online? Because Final Fantasy 11 just doesn't feel like a standard Final Fantasy game. And so what? There's a few characters in common, but I understand ultimately what
each world is its own.
Yeah, I know.
Number.
Especially,
I mean, think of it like the Marvel universe, right?
Right.
The main universe is 616, and then there's, you know, all these other numbers.
Well, and especially then when they started doing 13 and 13-2 and the after years and all the other stuff you named in there, like, especially when they started getting into all that, like, I understand why they did what they did. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to understate just what a big deal it was that they were doing a sequel to a Final Fantasy game like this at the time. It was weird, but... now it's less weird.
Very giddy, and then being excited about importing it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So,
but no, it's. I mean, even to this day, I think as a game, it still holds up.
Mm-hmm. So, confession: you know. I've barely played it. I know this surprises people, but I've barely played it. I keep meaning to get around to the HD remaster, but I keep saying I'm not going to play it until I beat Final Fantasy X. And then we all know what happens. Of course, I don't, because something shiny
comes
out. Lend
you the international copy.
I have the HD remasters, you know, which I think the newer ones.
Were the HD remasters? Did they have the?
The newer ones are, I think. I think the original ones on PS3 weren't, but then the ones on PS4 were. I think. Don't quote me on that. So.
I'll have to go back and look, but I saw something. Where is it? There was one about the other release. There we go. The last mission. Do this change parts of the Japanese subtitles or change or alter to fit the voiceovers? This is detailed strategy book for the international version. It doesn't. I mean, they probably were, but it didn't say anything about it being included. But I wouldn't doubt that it was.
Yeah. SJ100 Matt points out they were on Game Pass until recently, I believe. You're right. The Final Fantasy games were kind of, a lot of them were cycling through, but they appeared to only be good for a year because like Final Fantasy 13 and 13-2 are no longer there, or like 13-2 is almost up, as is Lightning Returns. So yeah, they're kind of cycling through Game Pass, unfortunately. So you got to buy it at this point. But those, I mean, they've been out a while and they go on sale frequently. So it's pretty easy to pick up whatever Final Fantasy HD game you want for $20 if you just wait for the right sale. And considering we're coming up on all the storefront holiday sales, especially what Steam starts December 22nd, Epic just started, I'm sure PlayStation and Microsoft are going to set their sales before they leave the office next week. And then it'll be a sale for like 2 weeks. So... it's coming if you want to catch up on that stuff. All right. Great pick. I'm as surprised as anyone else that hadn't been picked already, but that happens. Sometimes some good ones slip through.
Full of surprises.
Yeah. All right. Let's travel around quickly and check out some other news going on in the industry in some rapid fire news. Loki.
Yeah. So first off, I want to start with a cool ROM hack that I saw posted on Twitter. So this is actually it's called Contravania, the Ecclesia edition. It is a ROM hack of Castlevania, Order of Ecclesia. And it's basically adds the characters from Contra, mainly actually Contra Rebirth, into the game. And it plays like Contra. That is Very awesome. So they have multiple different patches you can do to it to get different characters in there. So they have like Bill Reiser, Genbei Yagyu, Probotector, Plissken, Brad Fang, and then for some reason Sans from Undertale's in there. I don't really know what that's all about, but
wait,
it
was
looks...
that Jubei?
I'm sorry?
You said Yagyu Jubei?
It's Genbei Yagyu. It's they're from Contra Rebirth.
Okay, I was just thinking of the of I mean, because a lot of games will reuse the historical person as a character, and I was like, whoa. Wait,
well, it's sort of kind of like so that that person is sort of kind of based off of that. They look like a samurai, but
the eye patch and everything.
Yes, and they have
okay, that's cool. I didn't realize they did that. That's awesome.
Yeah, so they've got that. It looks cool. Like I just saw the gameplay online and it's amazing. But yeah, it's for the DS version of the game. So there's I think one emulator on PC that works with it. And obviously if you have a flash cart, you can put it on your actual DS, and then you know, lots of other homebrew options available for playing DS games as well. So go check that out. Pretty cool. And then Super Nintendo World in Universal Hollywood finally has an opening date. And that is February 17th, 2023. We can go experience the boring Yoshi ride and then the cool Mario Kart ride.
That's going to sneak up on us. February 17th is, if you think about it, like 2 months away. So it's,
yeah
it's right not that long. Corner. Yeah. I'm excited. I want to go check it out. I don't think I'll go the first day for sure, but
no.
If I can figure out when spring break is and like not go that week either, like on a weekday in March or April, sounds great to just check it out. Yeah, I think it'll be a lot of fun. Cool. Yeah, I want to go. Be good. All right. Dark Sakura.
So Amazon has announced that they are developing a God of War series. They were in talks with Sony to adapt it. They reported this back in March. And they were reporting that the creators and producers of The Expanse, along with the executive producer of Wheel of Time, would be leading the project with input from Sony. And Amazon said, yep, we're doing that. So we'll see how it turns out. We're going to hear a lot of boy.
Yep. Speaking of things that are around the corner, that Last of Us series is just a couple weeks away. So it's...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's like up quick.
Yeah, right? Mid-January, right? It's going to be here before we know it. So wild. But yeah, God of War, that should be fun too. All right. Moving on. I got really excited at the Game Awards when I heard that Sony's Returnal is going to be coming out for PC. And I guess I'm thankful I have a new rig because I have enough RAM to make this work. But boy, oh boy, they are recommending 32 gigs of RAM. You can run Returnal with 16 gigs, but they are recommending, this is per Returnal Steam listing, 32 gigs to get the most out of, you know, the graphics and the gameplay. For the record, Microsoft's Flight Simulator, which if you've ever played that game, especially in 4K, is gorgeous. That game requires 8 and recommends 16. So Returnal needs more RAM than Flight Simulator. Honestly, I'm kind of not surprised considering, you know, what a fast-moving game Returnal is. Flight Simulator is more of a fly and chill. Returnal has, like, a lot of stuff going on the screen. It's a very fast-moving game, so I'm not completely surprised. That's probably why
sounds
it needs
like
so much
very
RAM.
Unoptimized, if you ask me.
That could probably be too, so we'll see. Nothing known yet if it will include support for NVIDIA's DLSS and AMD's FSR upscaling technology, but we'll see. Apparently some leaked video is giving insight that it might. Also, other system requirements, you'll need an Intel i7-8700 or an AMD Ryzen 7 2700X CPU, and you need to have at least an NVIDIA RTX 2070 Super or an AMD RX 6700 XT GPU to meet the recommended specs. So
money.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, you know, you're talking about playing a PlayStation 5 game on your PC, so I can understand why it's so demanding, but yeah, it's not going to be cheap, that's for sure. So I will probably pick it up, but we'll see. All right, let's travel around the world and check out some release dates. I don't know if it's still busy, but I guess especially with digital storefronts, who knows? But I feel like this time of year is more for sales. But let's see anyway. Loki, anything coming out in the U.S. this week?
Not a lot. There's Majestic, Magical, looks like, and that's on the Nintendo Switch. Uta no Princess Sama All-Star After Secret on Nintendo Switch, and Valkyrie Profile Lenith on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5. That's it. That's it for the year. We're all done.
All right. Well, going to Japan, obviously the holidays flow a little different there. So you do have some releases still on the Nintendo Switch this week, including that same Uta no Prince Sama is out this week. Earth Defense Force 4.1, The Shadow of New Despair, that is coming out in Japan this week. Majestic Magical is also out this week, as well as Fitness Boxing Fist of the North Star. Which I want to, didn't we talk about that on a previous show because we talked about the arcade game they used to have? Well, that's finally out on the Switch this week, so enjoy that. Money Parasite is out this week as well, and a game called Witch's Garden in regular and limited edition is also out on the Switch this week. Going over to the PlayStation 5, that one's a little more empty. We might see like one lone release next week, but otherwise a little quiet on the PS5 front. But lots of stuff for Switch fans this week. How about the UK, Dark Sakura?
One thing on there and didn't even give it a date. Oh, actually, I take that back. The date was yesterday for Switch was WRC Generations.
All right. Well, it's that time of year where things are slowing down. It's to be expected. All right. We have just a few more stories for you, and then we will get to the listener roundtable. I know we have at least one email tonight, and we'll see if we get any comments and possibly some calls over at Discord, our VOG Network Discord server. Speaking of Discord, we're going to do something next week's show is on a weird day, so we're going to do something a little bit special, and it's going to involve Discord, and I'm going to explain that in a little bit. But first, let's get into a few more stories, starting with Loki.
Yeah, so Justin Roiland's new game, High on Life, it was revealed that their studio, Squanch Games, used the AI art tool Midjourney AI to generate some assets for the game and add some quote-unquote finishing touches. Now, basically, they were saying that they used AI art tools because it doesn't look like as if a person made them. It's kind of like almost alien, sort of. And so they said it made the world feel strange, like a strange alternate universe of our world. And we used it to come up with weird, funny ideas. So I can imagine like generating different things and then it's all messed up. So then they take those assets to kind of make their own art, I guess. It's almost like concept art, I guess. Basically saying that I don't know what
that fits in very well with Rick and Morty.
Yeah, I don't know what the future holds, but AI is going to be a tool that has potential to make content creation incredibly accessible. I don't know how many years away we are, but all you will need is somebody with some big ideas. Of course, you know, it's still controversial with using AI art anyways, because it is being trained off of a lot of artists' work who didn't necessarily consent to it being used. And one of those major sites that artists do showcase a lot of their work that they do is, of course, ArtStation, who was actually being included in some of these AI trainings and made a comment regarding permission in AI art generators. It says, "We believe artists should be free to decide how their art is used, and simultaneously, we don't want to become gatekeepers with the site. Terms that stifle AI research and commercialization when it respects artists' choices and copyright laws." So their plans right now are going to be enabling or adding tags enabling artists to choose explicitly to allow or disallow the use of art for training non-commercial AI research and to training commercial AI. And they plan to update ArtStation website's terms of service to disallow the use of art or whatever. Artists aren't happy about that because they feel they should be taking a stronger stance to protect their works. But they are not doing that. So obviously they have been protesting by putting no AI type stuff. Also, like, I mean, that doesn't account for all the AI that's already been trained on that stuff. So I don't know. It's a tricky subject.
Yeah, it's tricky because, you know, obviously I don't love the idea of AI, you know, basically because like, you know, that app that came out recently, I don't remember what it was called, but everybody was posting their pictures on Facebook and stuff. And for me, I was more like, I feel like every time one of these hot new apps comes out, you find out something about the development team you don't like. So I stayed away from it. But, you know, it looked like a lot of the pictures that are coming out of it are basically like artwork that literally was someone else's, but like with someone's head slapped onto it and the fingers all different because AI can never get fingers right. So
it's like a former president's NFT drop or something. It's really weird.
I'm not going to go there. But you know, so AI is really silly in that regard. And the fact that, you know, it's using stolen artwork isn't cool. However, that being said, I don't like to just brush off AI artistry all in one fell swoop because I kind of see where, you know, if we're talking about next gen gaming, especially when we get into like PlayStation 6 game development, I know I'm getting way ahead of myself here, but you know how hard it's going to be to animate for these, you know, 8K TVs or whatever, you know, graphical fidelity is coming up next and so forth. It's going to get harder and harder. So I can see where maybe AI starts to get useful in developing like really high definition art later on, but that would all be trained off of art that the studio is doing and rules that the studio builds into their engine, which is obviously a very different sort of argument. But that's where I'm like, okay, that's where AI art makes sense to me, is literally automating processes that otherwise would cause a game 20 years to get made. That makes sense. But the whole like, you know, plugging your face or your, and I see this shit for sale on Facebook all the time, plugging your dog into the dogs playing poker artwork and all this stuff. Like, that's just silly. And, you know, obviously dogs playing poker is one thing because that's classic. But when it's, you know, somebody's DeviantArt or ArtStation or whatever, and these, it feels a little slimy to be doing that to me.
They've had some really cool like applications even outside of the art stuff, like the ChatGPT stuff, which where you can actually have like conversations with a chatbot and it'll like, you can ask it, okay, like here's some code I wrote, can you rewrite it in this language and it will do it for you, or like, hey, I need you to generate me something that does this, and it will usually do it correctly. And it's pretty incredible, like some of the stuff where they'll explain to you like how to do something in a certain way, and it's pretty cool. So like that combined with like some of these things, it's neat. It's when you kind of take it to the extremes though, where it's starting to get a little bit like ridiculous. Like there is somebody who generated a children's book using an AI to write the book for him, and then use another AI to create the pictures for it and then publish that as his own work, which is kind of like, I don't know. It's a little weird.
It is a little weird. Credit.
That's definitely on the darker side of gray.
Yeah. Credit the robot with writing the book, right? Credit 7 of 9 with writing your book. You know, don't credit, you know, yourself. It's a little silly.
And then right now we've had all the AIs being trained off of like with specific rules in place. Mm-hmm. Like what's going to happen later on when we start having people train them to do other things like, you know, Photoshop celebrities into different pornographic situations.
Oh yeah.
And that's like coming. It's just gonna get nuts.
Yeah, that's coming. You know,
or like even not even necessarily that, but like even like
deep dark fakes.
Yeah, like faking, because you can have AI generate voices, like it can take someone's voice and figure out how to speak like it and reproduce that with whatever you want. So like you can do all sorts of crazy stuff.
Wild.
We'll have to have AI to determine whether something's AI generated or not.
Right? The test determined that was AI. All right.
I just need an AI to prove that I'm not a robot so that, you know, I don't have to fill those things out anymore, the captchas.
Maybe we all are secretly half Cylon. Who knows? Anyway. Dijarama S says Adobe came out with a program for AI voices, caused an uproar in the voice acting community. Oh, I bet. Tiger Claw says there's AI generated podcast that had Joe Rogan interviewing Steve Jobs. I can think of nothing I want to hear less. All right.
But in a sense of, yes, I get that, like, and that's horrible, but, and I'm just saying, but, I do like the premise of, like, generating funny things with some of these, yeah, like, it, for example.
It's funnier when it's, like, the Daily Show using clips from an actual interview.
Well, no, I like that, but, like, there was something I saw where it was, like, it was that chat GPT thing where it's like, hey, I want you to explain me this as a script for Seinfeld or something, like, as a Seinfeld episode. And that was funny. Like, some of the stuff that they do with that, I think is pretty funny.
All right. Well, I don't know if a robot could create this next game, but Dark Soccer, what do you have for us?
Very, very interesting flashback, I would say. You know, emphasis on the flash. Fantavision 2020X is coming out on PlayStation 5 with PlayStation VR 2 support. It's going to be a digital game to release on February 22nd, 2023. And now the original came out on PlayStation 2. As I'm sure we might remember, it was people were like, what's with this game? And then everyone played it and was like, oh, this game's kind of addicting. But you basically hit like different missiles, kind of, I guess, Defender-ish. Am I thinking of Defender? Or
Missile Command, maybe?
Missile Command. My brain. I can't brain. And then they explode and they're pretty. There's more to it than that, but the explode and pretty part is really awesome. And then it'll have like vibration feedback through the controller and all kinds of haptic joy and explosions. And then you get a star mine.
I don't know if their trailer does it justice, but it doesn't look that great. Like I saw the trailer
like
graphic.
Fantavision.
it does look like Fantavision, but it doesn't look like a PlayStation 5 game. It looks like a PlayStation 3 game. Mm. And it's like, and I get it, like maybe for the VR part of that, they had to scale it back. Although, come on, PlayStation VR 2 should be able to push better fidelity than that. It just doesn't look, it looks dated. Like, and that's too bad, because Fantavision was great.
Until you just said it just now, Jamie, that the game's coming out in February, I kind of forgot that PSVR 2 is like that close to release. I thought we were still a ways out from that, but wowie. Well, Shane's in chat and he's excited for this. He says, I'm here day one for Fantavision for my PSVR 2. There's like 30 launch titles now for it, and it makes me more excited to get mine. I hope the crazy nonsensical Fantavision cutscenes are in this one too. Dartusia says, I'm surprised they brought this back. I think this is one of the first PS2 games I ever played. Yeah, a lot of people is like their first.
Yeah, maybe it's PS2 the YouTube.
Can I do the Starmine dance now? Do, 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 do.
Of course.
Do.
Maybe it's the YouTube compression that's doing it, because I'm looking at the screenshots and they look better. But like, yeah, the YouTube video does not look great.
Check your options and make sure it's not defaulting to a low resolution. Maybe.
No, it's 1080. It's just yeah, because they're talking about like 4K graphics and stuff like that. And so maybe that would look better, but it did look kind of not great in the other one.
SSJ100 Matt says, semi-related, I kind of miss Boom Boom Rocket. I should try to reload it.
Oh, that was a good one. Too, yeah.
I think it is backwards compatible. I believe if you had that on 360, it shows up in your Xbox One library, which would in turn show up in your Series X library. And all the songs in that game were like redone classical tunes. It's like the William Tell Overture and stuff. So they don't have to worry about licensing causing the game to get delisted or any of that stuff. So if you had Boom Boom Rocket, I don't know if they still sell it. I don't see why they wouldn't, though. But yeah, Boom Boom Rocket was like kind of Fantavision meets an actual music game title. It was a little bit of both. So I remember that one. It was a lot of fun. I remember there was one achievement I couldn't get, and I was so mad. I don't remember which one it was, but I almost want to go back and do it. So, oh, Dr. Cia says, I know I saw it on the store still. All right, well, it's still there. That's cool. All right, Loki, another Hollywood story, yeah?
Yep. I keep forgetting that they are actually making a Five Nights at Freddy's movie, Blumhouse is, and they've announced a couple more actors that are joining the cast. So Matthew Lillard from, 13 Ghosts, Scream, and of course, you know, Shaggy. And then Josh Hutcherson, who I recognize, but I don't remember which movies it's been. They say Tragedy Girls, but I've never seen that. but he's been in other things too. And what's cool is they say Jim Henson's Creature Shop is working on the animatronics.
Oh, that's fun.
That's going to be good. That's going to be fantastic. So I can't wait to see this. Don't know what's coming out. They started filming back in February.
Oh. But,
yeah, we'll have to wait and see again. Or, well, maybe, or were they, did they film in February or are they going to start filming?
I think they're going to start. I mean,
oh,
you know,
we'll begun in, we'll,
I was going to say, you don't announce your cast 8 months after the fact.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, they're gonna start filming in February. So hopefully either in the next year or, you know, early 2024.
Mish in chat says, can confirm Boom Boom Rocket is still on the Xbox store for $10. So there you go about that one. S200 Matt said, agrees it will be great that Jim Henson's Creature Shop is working on this. Tiger Claw is wondering, I wonder what the tone of the movie will be, a horror comedy, and will it be PG-13? I think it's almost certainly PG-13. They're not going to go R. And think about, the games were never gory. It was always implied violence, is jump scares and implied violence. So I really don't see why it's not PG-13.
Blumhouse, though, it's hard to say.
Maybe. I guess that's true, but I feel like they kind of market some of the merch at kids. So I don't know why they would want to shut, at least like older teens. I don't know why they would want to shut them out of the movie. I think that would be foolish.
Yeah, you're right. I think it probably would be like a teen.
Yeah. I think they're going to aim for PG-13 and they're just going to not be gory, but even movies.
Yeah, 'cause like looking at like some of their other movies that they had come out, like was it that one Megan with the creepy doll thing?
Can't fucking wait for that. Just to be clear.
That's PG-13. Yeah. So
well,
yeah,
a lot of horror movies are PG-13. They're not super gory. The Ring was PG-13 when it was, you know, the US version with Naomi Watts was PG-13. The Sixth Sense, even though maybe not the best example, I think was PG-13. Or did they say fuck too much in that movie? It might have been an R, but I think it was PG-13. I mean, something like Hereditary. Yeah, of course that's R. And if you know that movie, or God, what was the other one that director did? It's like one of Darkstalkers' favorite movies. Not Hereditary, but Midsommar. If you,
Midsommar's great.
Yeah, but Midsommar is definitely R-rated. Like, you know, so it's but you can do horror movies in PG-13 for sure.
And by the way, that Megan movie, that's only out in a couple weeks.
Oh, I'm so excited. I want to see
January 6th.
Avatar 2, I'm like, whatever. Megan, yes.
I meant to go out this week to see Violent Night, but that may be a way to see on video.
Remember when we all went to go see the first Avatar together? We went on a big date together and we saw it in 3D. I think it was the theaters in Folsom.
I saw it so many times I don't remember.
Yeah, I've heard good
looking
things about
forward to the sequel, honestly.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Avatar too. Yep. But
and keep in mind the original Poltergeist was PG because PG-13 didn't exist.
Yep. Yeah, She-Hulk just pointed out about Poltergeist being PG. Yeah, but it would have been PG-13 if that had existed, that's for sure. So yeah, so all right, moving on. Let's go to our last story tonight, which very random, but sometimes random things turn up in the gaming world. And it's a lost Michael Jackson clip. And it has to do with Michael Jackson and the Sega world. You remember how Michael Jackson very clearly worked with Sega, like was kind of shadow working on some projects, right? Well, apparently, some fans have actually uncovered an extra kind of like bonus role of Michael Jackson. He was the lead actor in the Advanced System 1 or AS1 motion simulator game Scramble Training. Apparently, they found the tape at a flea market in the UK. And if you wanted to watch this on YouTube, there was just a shit camcorder 90s shaky thing that was out there. But thanks to finding basically either the master or a direct copy of it at a random flea market in the UK, you can see a direct transfer of the footage. And let's be honest, Michael Jackson, not really known for his acting. Video games at that time, really not known for their acting. You put the two together and you get not so great acting. But it's a piece of video game history that's like, whoa, kind of neat to be seeing
you,
this
ooh,
now. Yeah. What's that?
Thank you, ooh la la.
Thank you, ooh la la. Anyway, and yeah, apparently the guy who had the stuff he was selling at the flea market, he had some Sega merchandise he got from a gentleman whose father, a former Sega employee, had recently passed away. The lucky buyer found promo posters, toys, and then apparently a D2 tape he forgot to mention he'd paid a fair bit for. So how about that? Anyway, So that's all over the internet now. It's available on YouTube. Just look up Michael Jackson and Scramble Training.
The game does not look good.
If you care. No, it sure doesn't. But, you know.
It was not great.
Yeah. But it's one of those things, again, you know, it's very dated technology. It's late 90s. So anyway.
Yeah, but it also loses something, too, because I think it's like one of those motion roller coaster ride things, too.
Yes, yes.
So you probably lose a little bit.
A little bit. All right, and that brings us to the listener roundtable, where every week we invite your questions via our mailbag. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com, as well as our Discord server over at vognetwork.com. That's vognetwork.com/Discord. You can also ask questions in chat if you'd like. I believe we have one email tonight, though, so I'm going to turn it over to Dark Sakura.
It's a pretty short one. Hi, this is I Can't See from Twitch and Discord. As a staunch supporter of cloud gaming, including Stadia, I've noticed that there's this old guard mentality in gaming. The mentality includes only buying disc-based consoles and physical media. They worry about the, quote, all digital future, end quote, and prefer to, quote, own their own games. Because of this, some aspects of modern and future gaming habits are outside of their norm, so they turn up their noses at them. Things like mobile, live service, F2P, and of course, cloud gaming. I won't bring up the two biggest taboo elephants in the room. There's still a demand for ownership and the older ways. How do you think the industry could cater to the old guard while looking to the future? I'm kind of thinking like the limited run game stuff does, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it becomes like a big collector's item and you get more reward for owning the physical copy because it has stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, first off, thank you for the email, I Can't See, which I believe as a Stadia fan, I might be jumping to conclusions, but I'm assuming found our show through that YouTube show you did all about Stadia, Dark Sakura, right? Yeah. Right before they
betrayed me. Right before, it broke my heart.
Right before Stadia pulled the plug on everything. So welcome.
How dare.
Glad we grew our family from that appearance. By the way, all of us available for appearances on other shows. I just did Pokemon Go podcast this week. It's not on their feed yet, or at least it wasn't earlier today, so I haven't linked it anywhere, but I had a good time with them this week. But I digress. Let me get to the email. So I have definitely been of that mindset for a long time that physical copies are more desirable, and the reason why is because I think the used game market and the secondhand game market has set up the expectation that you can have some equity in your games, basically some value in your games. Especially, we've seen how for some older games and some classic games, that can really grow. For example, try to get a copy of Suikoden 2 for the PlayStation, at least before they, you know, especially before they, or Suikoden 1 or 2, before they did the PS3 download. I mean, I think even now those games go for a lot. I'm sure Dark Sakura can tell you about some, you know, physical games that go for a lot of money.
Just look up Ninja Gaiden Trilogy.
Yeah.
Look up Mighty Final Fight, Final Fight Guy. Yep. Mm-hmm. I own all three of these.
Mm-hmm. Now, while these are old school examples, I think a lot of people kind of hope that maybe if they hang on to their physical libraries, they're going to grow in value at some point. Or even if I don't care for the game, I can still turn it around and get $10 back, right? So I think for me, that's been why I've been tied to physical media for a long time and having that equity. Now, if the value is there to kind of get some of that back in a digital title, then I'm all about digital. And what I mean by that is, look, if you're going to discount the game for 50%, but I get it digitally, I can at least go, okay, well, I only paid half as much for this. So okay, if I can't turn around and sell this back. You asked in the email, how do you think the digital market could maybe gain something with the physical market? I remember a date and time when I think Steam was going to do this. Microsoft was going to do this, but then they got shot down. But that was a different sort of circumstances. But that is, put equity in your digital games. Make it so that you can turn around and sell your digital games. You might remember this was in Microsoft's original vision for the Xbox One, but it was a little ahead of its time. And I don't think they were clear in the way they communicated a lot of that. And a lot of that got shot down and they were forced to really, you know, do a 180 on that. I just think Don Matrick was a shitty messenger at the time. And I think could have probably done something a lot different with some better messaging of the Xbox One's original vision with that by allowing a system where your digital games and your digital library has equity would have been huge. So I think that would have been a great thing, but it didn't work out that way, unfortunately. Xbox is in a fine place now. You got Game Pass and all this other stuff, but you know. But then I understand your nerves when it comes to things like Game Pass. You know, where movies go, the game industry is going to follow. And so that's why you've got things like Game Pass. And now Sony is following those footsteps. And I feel like Stadia, if they'd offered something along that line, and I guess they did, but again, it wasn't communicated the best way outside of its fan base. You know, if you had the Stadia Pro, you got free games every month, essentially, but it didn't quite have that same feeling of like a library that you tapped into and all this stuff. At least those on the outside weren't seeing it very well. And I think we all know Google kind of stopped supporting that not long after they released it, unfortunately, as far as a marketing standpoint goes. But
they announced the closure of Stadia. They said, oh, we're doing our cloud gaming Chromebook. And everyone was like, yeah, fuck off.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So, so where does the industry go from here if a lot of things are going digital? This is exactly why Diablo 4 has a $100 collector's edition that doesn't have a copy of the game with it. And as Dark Sakura pointed out, limited run. You know, even with the Netflix, the Hulus, the Disney Pluses, et cetera, of the world, there is still broadcast television. There is still Blu-rays. You know, there's still going to be a demand for some of the old guard because broadcast television excels at live TV. I mean, look at what happened when they tried to put Dancing with the Stars on Disney Plus. I think it's lost like half of its viewers, and you can't fault Tyra Banks for all of that. So I think live TV really excels on the traditional broadcast networks, and especially news. You can't do news today anyway. Well, they tried. Look what happened to CNN Plus. That came and went as fast as it could, right? So anyway. Mm-hmm. But I do think cloud gaming is also going to be in the future, you know, more and more. And I'm not talking like exclusive cloud stuff. I'm talking about games that are in part powered by the cloud. You've heard about, you know, one of Kojima's games. I don't know if it's Death Stranding 2. No, it's not, because it's something that's going to be Xbox exclusive, I think, because he was talking about partnering with Microsoft and their cloud. It's going to be something that probably leverages the cloud. So I sort of think a lot of gaming is going digital, whether you like it or not. I don't think the cloud catches on completely until over-the-air 5G is accessible in more places. But I think 10 years from now, yeah, you're going to be looking at cloud gaming being a big part of things. How do people get value? Either physical trinkets, collector's edition, or somebody figuring out how to develop that system where you can buy and sell digital games, I think is going to be huge for that. So, but the industry is evolving. Hang on.
I tend to agree.
Yeah. But there's always, I mean, you know, not to beat a dead horse, but look at the merchandising. Yeah, it's like the Spaceballs. Merchandising. Okay, because
flamethrower.
If you go to Target, I remember when I was a kid, you didn't see an aisle full of video game tie-ins, video game merchandising when I was a kid. But now you go and there's an aisle that's Fortnite, Minecraft, Five Nights. I mean, a lot of these large games get a lot of merchandising. Heck, the Mario Legos, you know what that is? Merchandising. Super Mario World at Universal Hollywood. You know what that is? An opportunity
Super
to
Mario
sell
Brothers toilet paper.
Super merchandising. So I think you're just going to see a lot of that. But that also just has to do with the fact that the kids are grown up now.
Yeah.
The kids are grown up now and have kids. Video games is a part of our culture. It's not a fringe thing that nerds do in their basement. There's just as many women as men, if not more, that play video games now. So it's a part of our culture. And so the merchandising makes more sense because people.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Sorry, Mike Deft. Yes, I got the name wrong in the moment. It's Super Nintendo World. Excuse my beauty. All right. Thank you for the email. I can't see. That was a great topic. Appreciate it. All right. If you want to send us an email with a great topic or an average one, that's okay too. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com is the place to send those emails. Also, I saw some comments in chat. So I saw a question in chat here. And if I missed your question, please go ahead and restate it. But She-Hulk10 asking a question of our panel tonight. What do you guys want for Christmas? Well, Dark Sakura celebrates Hanukkah, but we'll say...
I take presents.
Yeah, you'll accept Christmas gifts. Sure.
Well, I've made it abundantly clear what I want. And what... Steam wallet. So I can get Midnight Suns.
So what you, well, what you really want is the $100 Midnight Suns Collector's Edition.
That, well, I mean, because it's the season pass and everything. Yeah. I mean, that would be nice, but I mean, understand. I'm being realistic.
Yeah.
Oh, who am I kidding? I'll just use it for RX sales for cosmetics. Dead by Daylight. Which is the whole reason I'm bothering with the whole holiday rift right now.
Well, I got what I wanted for Christmas. I guess I'll go ahead and tell you all what happened. So Alan and I exchanged gifts a little early this year because he wasn't going to have a way to hide my gift. And it showed up. It was on sale. He had to get it. I just haven't built my Tron arcade machine yet, but it's sitting downstairs waiting to be made.
That was it.
Yep. So I'm going to have a twin over here, and that's part of the reason why I need to spin my office around. I really wanted to do it this weekend, but I've been a little sore and haven't been able to muster the energy to get all the parts and build them. But that'll be something I really hope I can do with the holiday break that's coming up. So I got what I wanted for Christmas, so I can't complain at all. Otherwise, I guess I would like to get a PlayStation 5, but that can wait. That's a tall order, and it can wait till early next year. Alan and I are going on a cruise. We're going on the Star Trek cruise again in late February. So I may actually miss two OLRs. No, I don't think I do. No, the cruise is Friday to Friday, so I'll be back on a Saturday. So I was like, am I going to miss OLR twice? No, I should only miss it once, actually. So that's coming up, and got to save money for that too. I mean, the cruise is paid for, but you know, we want spending money. So SG100 Matt says, who are the guests that are slated to be on the cruise this year? Janeway's back. Kate Mulgrew is back this year. That's the big name. I know we get a photo op with a lot of the Deep Space.
Oh, Plymouth.
They have a lot of the Deep Space Nine cast. Both Daxes are there this year. But you ask a good question. Avery Brooks though, because he doesn't show up to that stuff. What?
Rob, I need Nicole DeBoer's autograph simply and have it said to the one fan of Hypercube 2. Of Hypercube.
She wasn't in Hypercube. She's
one of the first cube.
I was going to say, I love the cube. Even if it's a little gory, I love the cube. So
I don't know why I thought Hypercube. No, that's like what I first knew her from.
Yeah, same. So I think we do have a photo with the two Daxes because I think it's the one that we get included for pre-ordering the cruise or whatever. So, but the only ones we bought, the other big name that's going on the cruise this year, and we bought the meet and greet with Doug Jones. We had to. So...
Well, another thing, too, is that I first knew Terry Farrell from Hellraiser 3.
Mm. Oh, that's a good one.
The movie wasn't great, but that's what I knew her from.
Yeah. So Doug Jones is the other big name, but we also got a meet and greet with Brent Spiner because
I love him.
He was on the last cruise, but we didn't get a picture with him or whatever, for whatever reason last time. I feel like we ought to buy a meet and greet with Denise Crosby just because the more I see her, the more I love her. I just like, she was such a highlight of the last cruise. So anyway, all those folks are going on the cruise this year. And let's see, Jonathan Frakes is the other like big name because he wasn't on the year we went. Let's see who else is on this year. There's a lot of people. You can go to StarTrekTheCruise.com if you want to see the full list. Robert Duncan McNeil is making it this year. He didn't make the other Voyager year we went. Michelle Hurd from the Picard series, Jess Bush from Picard are both going this year as well. So yeah, it's a good list. But I'm just honestly like celebs are one thing. I love the people. Part of the reason I love the Star Trek cruise, I'm a dirty casual when it comes to Trek. Okay, I haven't seen every series. I try, but I just haven't. I'm not up to date on everything. Here's the thing. It's a great crowd. It's 30, 40, and 50-something nerds. Shatner's not there this year, thank God. So I expect most of the crowd will be a little more progressive. Here's the thing. Not that I care about a person's political leanings Totally. But here's the thing. If Alan and I hold hands on the boat, nobody gives a shit. Unfortunately, the reality is most cruises, that's not the case. You get a boomer population that still kind of lives in old times and has some old ways of thinking. So that's part of the reason I like going on the Star Trek cruise, quite frankly. And I don't want to go on a gay cruise because gay cruises oftentimes are one of two things. They're floating circuit parties, which I'm not interested in, or they're all lesbians with kids, which is great for that audience. Not what I'm looking for in a cruise. I'm looking for the nerd cruise. Perfect for me. So anyway, Loki, we did not get your what do you want for Christmas, going back to She-Hulk's question.
Oh, I don't know. A few hundred subscribers on YouTube.
I'd like that on Twitch, please.
It's a fair ask. We want that for Vogue Network, too. Hint, hint. So, of course, everyone here, I assume, is already following. If you're not, though, consider it. Thank you. All right. Great questions. Let's see, looking in chat for some other questions. I don't see any, but I do want to mention this. So we are going to be doing a show next week, probably a shorter show, but we're going to be here. Next week is Christmas Day. We don't expect you all are going to be here. However, Bobby Blackwolf will be back. He will be on that night and we'll be here as well. We're going to open up the floor to further questions. I know we don't always get a lot at the end of the show. However, we're going to format the show for December 25th a little bit like we did the 20th anniversary show. We're going to format it a little bit more like a panel where we're going to answer your questions. And your questions can be about gaming. They can be about podcasting. They can be about life lessons. Whatever you want to ask about within reason. DJ Rama S says, the return of Ask Orange Lounge? Pretty much. So whatever you want to ask, within reason. This is not Dr. Ruth, okay? But as long as, at the same time.
We could try to fake her accent.
I would blur the line of being offensive if I tried to do that, so I don't know. But
I love Dr. Ruth.
Yeah, I love Dr. Ruth, too. But anyway, I will create a thread in Discord after the show if you would like to. I was trying to do it during the show, and then I realized, oops, Loki and Dark Sakura's faces go away when I switch screens on Discord. I will make a thread in the Orange Lounge Radio channel on Discord after the show for you to submit your questions for consideration. We probably won't get to everything, but we'll try. So we look forward to seeing you next week. With that, let me check with Loki to see if there's any last minute stories.
No.
I thought so. It's probably a little bit. The next 2 weeks going to be a little slower, and that's okay. I should say this is going to be the format of the show for the next 2 weeks because I anticipate between Christmas and New Year's, it's going to be a lot of the best games of 2022. And we can talk about that as well, but it's not going to be a lot of new news coming out that week. Maybe a little bit, but usually
we can always do like
is good news.
We always used to do like our top games and then we also did like predictions as well.
Oh, we need to bring that back. I agree. Let's do predictions. We'll do that on January 1st. That'd be fun. SG100 Matt says, we do have our predictions of 2022 to get to. No, we don't. We never did them because of the whole virtual situation.
Anyways, we're doing something else, which is nothing.
Yeah. So we'll mix it up. We don't have a robot sitting on the desk anymore. Because who could have predicted COVID? But we'll do just something else. All right. Anyhow, on that note, let's wrap it up for tonight. We'll go around and get folks' final thoughts, and then we'll be done for tonight. Dark Sakura, I'm assuming you are doing a post show tonight with some Debbie Delight.
I am. Gwen and I are already partied up, and we have room for two more to join us.
If I didn't have to edit OLR and get all that done, plus I smell dinner, so.
There'll be time later than that.
We'll see.
All right. And we're going to just go around and jump in snowmen and be ridiculous.
Sounds like fun. Do you have a final thought?
Look on my Twitter for my Megmas pictures.
Do you have a final thought for us tonight?
That was my final thought.
Oh, okay.
come play with us and give me a dollar.
Later. All right. Bye, Dark Sakura. Take
bye.
Care. Bye. Loki, your final thought tonight.
My final thought is I'm going to still be working on content creation some more.
Sounds good.
It's just going to be my life.
Yeah, I definitely want to leverage more TikTok. It's just about finding that right thing to talk about that I'm very passionate about. So, and just, sitting down and doing it, right? It's harder than you think. It really is.
Yeah.
Otherwise, my final thought, I don't know. Just I hope everybody out there has a good holiday. If you are the Hanukkah celebrating sort, I hope you have a good holiday. It's starting off well for you. If you're the solstice sort, I hope you have a good, you know, even if Christmas sort, I hope just have a great holiday. Thank you for being here. Thank you for making us a part of your weekly routine. I'm just very grateful that we're still here going into our 21st year next year, if you can believe it, from 2002 to 2023. It'll be our 21st year next year. Old enough to drink. I kind of can't believe it, but it is what it is. So thank you so much for being a part of it. That's it. That's all I have to say. Have a wonderful week, everybody. Happy holiday. Happy December. Take care. We'll see you next time. Good night, everyone.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for our live show, tune in to VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio nor Vogue Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.